From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Spring Quality on the outside. Here comes Call Provision. Spring Quality, Call Provision. Spring Quality, held on. Spring Quality and Edgar Prado. They take the Red Smith Stakes.
She's Pretty Lucky gives way. There's one furlong to go. My Lady Curlin comes away with the lead. Karen is right there. Sally's Curlin on the outside continues to close. Here comes Sally's Curlin coming after My Lady Curlin. My Lady Curlin, Sally's Curlin, Sally's Curlin, My Lady Curlin. Sally's Curlin got it.
This is the Equine Forum presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They come for home and Hayden's Havoc. Hayden's Havoc finding more on the lead. And it's Hayden's Havoc going to be a memorable win for trainer Peter Miller. Win number 1,000 for Peter Miller.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Well, just when you were thinking that we might get a slow week in thoroughbred racing. Nothing pressing to talk about. Post-Breeders' Cup. A weekend with only three graded stakes on the schedule. No grade ones. Prior to next weekend's feast of greatest stakes action across the country, just when you thought that was going to be the case, one of the top trainers in the game says, I'm stepping away, and I'm taking a temporary hiatus. I'm going to talk more about that in just a minute. But first things first, hello again, everyone. Good morning, and welcome to the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you back in the saddle with me right up until 11 a.m. Eastern, all across North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and around the country, and streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Well, California-based trainer Pete Miller has saddled more than 1,300 winners in a career which has seen him rack up a multitude of leading trainer titles, and he saddled, in addition to those, five Breeders' Cup winners. It's been an unbelievable career by many, many standards. But on Thursday, Miller sent out a statement announcing he would be stepping away from the game, saying in that statement, "The effort to compete at the highest level of my profession has taken its toll on my family and my health, and I believe this decision is best for me, my family, and our future." It is certainly no secret that Pete Miller has come under additional scrutiny lately after five horses from his stable died this year alone. He's also been sanctioned three times in 2021 for Class 4 medication violations. And it's natural to think that these are the reasons Pete is distancing himself from the sport. But in a statement, in that statement that he sent out on Thursday, he made a point to say, "I know that there may be some speculation related to this decision. However, I want to make it very clear that this is not a result of any regulatory action, secret agreement, or hidden agenda of any kind. This is strictly a personal decision." And in a time when we have seen more and more people in the world of sport and other industries come forward to discuss the challenges that they are facing with mental illness and mental health issues, it is certainly plausible Pete just needs a break. Someone whom I'm sure can relate to this is trainer Dale Romans, who is going to join me in the final segment of today's show at 10:30 Eastern on this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. I'm going to ask Dale about the demands of the training profession. And I'm sure it's like any other job, right? You have responsibilities that create stress. You have goals, you have expectations placed on each of us by others and by ourselves that create stress and create anxiety. That's just the part of any job, anything you do for a living. Horse trainers are not immune. I'm also sure that the additional scrutiny Pete Miller has been under, with five of his horses dying this year, more than any other trainer in California, by the way, and multiple medication violations in 2021, doesn't help that stress level. So, yeah, I'm sure Pete Miller needs a break. But much like I've talked about with Bob Baffert, due process and your day in court means something here in America. If you go back to December 27th of last year, Pete has had six horses die in his care. About half from musculoskeletal injuries and half from sudden death hemorrhage. Without knowing any of the details surrounding these, it would be inappropriate and way out of line, in my opinion, for me to comment much further on that situation. But I will say this. This is probably the right time for Pete Miller to step back, look in the mirror, reevaluate, and figure out what the heck is going on. Because that ain't normal. Something is going on within that program to cause these catastrophic injuries. I'm not buying Pete's statement that these things are not part of the reason he's stepping away, or not the sole reason he's stepping. Maybe not the sole reason, but certainly they have to be part of it. They certainly play into the health concerns, he stated, for stepping away. It all goes hand in hand. But we wish Pete the best and hope he's going to be okay going forward. He will take a break. He will spend time with his family. He will focus on his health and get a chance to step back and reevaluate the philosophy, the approach, the program, and see if we can figure out what's going on there. The race of the day this afternoon at Aqueduct is the Grade 2 Red Smith Handicap. Pretty good race, too. Tim Wilkin is going to join me in a few minutes to talk about that race and spend some time remembering Pulitzer Prize-winning sports writer Red Smith. Going to talk about the man who the race is named for. And with Thanksgiving coming up on Thursday, and this being the time of year that so many people are giving thanks and helping others, I thought it would be nice to talk with jockey Rajiv Miraj on this Saturday morning about his new endeavor. It's called Road Jockey, if you haven't heard of it. He is helping to streamline the process of getting food to people in his native Jamaica. Somewhat of a Uber Eats type of situation is what it sounds like. But I'm going to ask Rajiv about it and what he's doing there in Jamaica to make it easier for people to get food. Rajiv is going to join me at 8:40 Eastern. The New York Islanders of the NHL are going to open their new hockey arena tonight on the property of Belmont Park. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out logistically with game day traffic. They'll have concerts there too, concert traffic. And of course, the race traffic being right next to Belmont Park. If you've ever tried to get to a big race day at Belmont, coming across the Cross Island, it can be a bit of a challenge if you're not there early. And I'm going to talk to turf rider and blood horse contributor Bob Ehalt at 9 o'clock Eastern to discuss how that relationship might work out between the Islanders and Belmont Park. That comes up at 9. 9:35, Gulfstream analyst Ron Nicoletti is going to be here to walk through today's mandatory pick six sequence in South Florida. Has to be paid out today. Ronnie will take a look at all six races at 9:35. Hour 3 kicks off at 10 Eastern in the room with Sean Clancy. Today, a special visit, unique visit, probably a better way to describe it, with former jockey, now Charlestown's top trainer, Jeff Runco. Yeah, he started like so many trainers do as a rider, made the transition, and Sean talks to him about that at 10 Eastern. 10:25, Kurt Becker takes you on his weekly stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And at 10:30, I ask, they answer, Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin. They will both be here to debate so many of the topics that are happening in the sport today, including more on Pete Miller. That comes up at 10:30 Eastern time. Poll question today, which morning line favorite is most likely to win today? There are only those three greatest stakes, so I thought we would focus on the three greatest stakes taking place in the United States today. Which morning line favorite is most likely to win today? Obligatory in the Chalukyi, Serve the King in the Red Smith, or Eight Rings in the Native Diver? Obligatory in the Chalukyi, Serve the King in the Red Smith, or Eight Rings in the Native Diver out of Del Mar. Which morning line favorite is most likely to win today? You know, and I'll give you a fourth choice too. All three will win. How's that? Four choices for you. Go to at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net, and let me know your thoughts about that poll question today. Should be interesting to see how those responses come in. None of those horses are overwhelming favorites. They're not 2-5 on the morning line. So the three stakes are well-balanced, and I have to think that one of those, maybe two of those horses, are going to get beat. I can see a scenario where one, maybe all three get beat. I guess maybe that's another, you can only give four choices on Twitter, so we're not going to be able to give you that one. But maybe if you think all three get beat, let me know that too. Just chime in with a comment or shoot me an email and let me know your thoughts. Which morning line favorite is most likely to win today? Obligatory in the Chalukie, Serve the King in the Red Smith, Eight Rings in the Native Diver, or fourth choice, all three will win. All right, when I come back, I'm going to kick things off with Tim Wilkin. We'll take a look at the Red Smith handicap at Aqueduct today, and he will talk about the man, Red Smith. Rajiv Miraj follows him in hour number one. The Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment, is right here on HRRN.
Riptide Rock flying side. I think safe conduct narrowly from Riptide Rock and a photo in the Queen's Plate. And Raging Bull, but Daisuke Fukumoto stole this year's Rico Woodbine Mile with Town Cruise. Walton Street demolishes them. A big winner of the Patterson Canadian International.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 12:55 Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:45 Eastern. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion, all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Then it is North Dakota and Dr. Mounty. The field is in the stretch. They're closing in now on Real Factor. Here comes Ziad on the outside. Here comes Aquaphobia. Here comes Red Knight. North Dakota, far outside. It is Dr. Mounty. It is Ziad with the lead. But Red Knight is closing along with North Dakota. North Dakota to get up and win the Red Smith Stakes.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on this Saturday morning. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. That was John Embriel with a call of last year's Red Smith Stakes. North Dakota getting the victory for trainer Shug McGahee under jockey Jose Lescano. It was a big one for Shug. Number four in the Red Smith. He has won it more than any trainer in the history of the sport. If you're wondering about the jockey who has won the Red Smith more than any other jockey, that is Hall of Famer Angel Cordero Jr., who has done it on five different occasions. His first in 1969, most recent in 1985. He's not going to win it today because he is long since retired. Shug McGahee, not going to win it today. He does not have a horse entered, but it is a very contentious group. And I now welcome Tim Wilkin, longtime turf writer for the Albany Times Union. You will hear from him later in the program during our I Ask, They Answer segment with Dale Roman. So bookending today's show with Tim Wilkin. Timmy, what could be better?
Gee, thanks, Mike. I guess it could only be better if Dale was here, but I feel like I have one of my wheels missing.
Well, he'll be here later on. We'll get a chance to hear from him.
Yeah, we'll be together later on. He's not sleeping. He's probably training right now.
Yeah, I'm sure he's up long before you and I even thought about hitting the snooze button for the first time.
Well, I've been up for a while.
Have you? Hey, see, I get up early on Saturday mornings. During the week, 7:30, maybe 8 if I'm lucky.
That's why they call you the Baron.
Yeah, it's good to be the Baron, right?
Yeah,
on some days. On some days.
No,
well, listen, first of all, this interview, by the way, presented by our friends at Jellyfish Water. Timmy, this Red Smith today, we'll talk about the race itself, but I really want to talk about the man known as Red Smith. Red, of course, a nickname, Wellesley Red Smith. Tell me a little bit more about him. I know you had a chance to meet him one time, or a couple of times.
Yeah, he gave himself the nickname Red because he hated his birth name. He hated it. So he said, I'm going to be known as Red Smith. And the name Red Smith, it sounds like it should be a sports writer, doesn't it? Or someone that should be running around the back stretches. And that's something that Red Smith did, and he did it well. I mean, he worked at papers in Milwaukee and St. Louis and Philadelphia before he found a home in New York. And, you know, a lot of people remember him as the sports columnist for the New York Times. Now, he didn't start at the Times until he was 66 years old. He was at the New York Herald Tribune for like 20 years in the mid-40s. And when that paper folded, he became a freelancer. And then he became the columnist for the Times in 71. And he was there until 1982. His strengths were baseball, football, boxing, and horse racing. I mean, that was an era back then with writers. Everybody covered horse racing. And it's sad today. I mean, that could be a story for another day, but newspapers don't cover horse racing like they used to. I mean, you'd have a hard time getting a seat in the press box at any racetrack, major racetrack, and you have the likes of a Red Smith there. And I got to meet him. You know, he was towards the end of his career, and I was just starting. It was either 1980 or 81. I mean, he passed in 82, but I was up at Saratoga race course. And, you know, if anybody that was starting to cover horse racing knew who Red Smith was, because there was one line that he either said or wrote. I don't know if he ever actually wrote it, but it's been written by others many, many times about how he described Saratoga. The line was that from New York City, you drive north for about 175 miles, turn left on Union Avenue, and then you go back 100 years. That was that was his marquee line. And, you know, being a rookie, and I was up in the press box in Saratoga, and one day I was sitting next to Red Smith, and I'm like just talking to myself, what should I say to him? Should I say anything to him? I mean, this guy was like, you know, he was like the Michael Jordan of our profession.
Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there. I said, what should I do? So finally he engaged me. He said, excuse me. And I looked at him. I said, yeah, Mr. Smith. He goes, call me Red. I said, what do you need, Red? What can I do for you? He goes, can you go down to the commissary and get me a piece of pie? So I got out of my chair, walked down to the press kitchen, and got him a piece of cherry pie, walked up, and then we kind of shot the breeze for the rest of the day about horse racing. I mean, he was just a wonderful man who could spin a yarn, and it was just a pleasure to get to meet him, albeit briefly, in my career. And, you know, you don't see horse races named for journalists very often. I mean, you got the Red Smith, the Joe Hirsch, you know, and Joe Hirsch is the dean of horse racing writers. I mean, he was Joe Hirsch just covered horse racing. Red Smith covered other sports, but Joe Hirsch has a race named for him, and Jim Murray, the longtime voice of California racing, used to have the race named for him at Hollywood Park, the Jim Murray Memorial Handicap. But to have a race named for him, and Red Smith loved horse racing. If you can't find a story at a racetrack, you're in the wrong profession. So he was a delightful guy, a great writer, and I was glad to know him just a little bit. Just getting him that piece of pie is something I'll always remember.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. What a special moment for a young man just getting started in the game. And now you've gone on to make your mark on the sport, Timmy, as a turf rider. And I think that when you look back on where you came from, and I know you don't forget, you're going to look at that moment and say, wow, that was one of those moments. I know I've had them too, when I was first getting started and trying to get into the industry. There are certain people that you're never going to forget and certain moments that are going to stand out to you, and I'm sure that that's one for you.
Yeah, and the thing about, and just to get off to the Joe Hirsch thing a little bit, with Joe Hirsch, he was a guy, he loved it when young writers came into a press box and wanted to learn about horse racing. If you had a question for him, no matter how idiotic it might seem, he would stop whatever he was doing and he would just start looking through all his books to get the answer for you. A lot of the times he had the answer right at the top of his head. But, that made a mark on me, to have these guys that had been through it. And it's something I wanted to do in my life, and that they were willing to help me. It means so much. I mean, if people come up to me and ask me something, I always try to help them out, even though I don't have the wealth of knowledge or clout that a Red Smith or a Joe Hirsch would have. But, just to have people that want to learn about this game, and if they ask me a question, I'm going to make sure I do everything I can to help them and anything I can do. But, and trust me, I'm not saying I'm in Red Smith or Joe Hirsch's class, and I'm sure there'll never be a race named after me. But, I'm sure Red Smith is up there smiling down on the fact that his race is being run again after, I think it was named for him in 82. It was renamed from the Edgemere Handicap.
What makes a writer and a reporter, whatever it might be, like Red Smith, like Joe Hirsch, what makes them Red Smith and Joe Hirsch? What sets them apart from everybody else?
I think it's their personalities. They're respectful. They do the job the right way. They're not jerks. They covered the game the right way, and and when you do something like that, you're gonna get the respect of the people you're covering. I mean, if you're out in the backstretch at in the mornings when the horses are working out, trainers know who's out there. Trainers know what writers are out there. And then the ones that are sitting at home, staying in bed, they don't get the respect from the trainers that some of the others do that are always out there. I believe anyway, not that, not like you're looking to put a red badge of courage on yourself for being out there. But, I think it's a love of the sport when you're out there in the morning to watch the horses work, to watch these guys do what they do. And, and keeping your distance and talking to these guys when they're ready to talk to you. It's not like going into a locker room after a baseball game and going up to a locker and talking to, a pitcher or the shortstop or whoever it might be. When you're out in the backstretch, you're talking to these guys on their time. And when they're ready to talk to you, that's when you talk to them. There's a lot of waiting around, and that's what I think that after you do this game for so long, you find that out. And
yeah,
those guys did that too.
I always
although Joe Hirsch, Joe Hirsch would stop anybody. Everyone would stop for Joe Hirsch because he was that well-respected.
Yeah. You know, Timmy, by the way, talking with longtime turf writer Tim Wilkin here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You'll hear him later in the program, 10:30 Eastern. I Ask, They Answer, that segment that he does every week with Dale Romans. That's going to be a lot of fun too, Timmy. But, you know, you and I have spent many, many days on the backstretch together, not necessarily together, but working, trying to cover different storylines, me for the radio, you doing it in print. And I always used to think for the longest time that it was a fault of mine that I wouldn't approach a trainer and just stick a microphone in his face out of the blue, that I always wanted to be respectful and say, okay, this is their work time. They're doing their job, and I don't want to interfere. It'd be like them coming over and trying to talk to me while I'm in the middle of an interview, right? They wouldn't ever think of doing that, and I would never think of bothering them. So I've always been overly cautious, and now that I've gotten to know so many of the trainers, it's easier to just line up times to visit with them when they're ready. But like you said, on their time, and I've seen you do it a million times. You stand around, you wait, and when that person, he or she, is ready to talk, that's your one opportunity. And you've got to be respectful, like a Red Smith, like a Joe Hirsch.
Yeah, if you don't, you're not gonna get it to talk to anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen instances where, you know, you got some of these people that go out there that don't go out there often. They just barge right into somebody and say, "I'm ready to talk to you," and that doesn't work that way. It just does not work that way, and they get their comeuppance very quickly.
I want to talk to you about this year's race here in just a second, but one more question about Red Smith, about guys like Joe Hirsch. As you started to work through your career and make a name for yourself, and you started to write bigger stories and cover bigger storylines, were there things that you, even if you did it subconsciously, that you tried to work into your style and your philosophy, that some of the similar things that they would do when they covered a story, or did you say, hey, I can't be anything like those guys?
Well, you always want to be your own guy. I mean, you don't want to be a copycat and say, I'm gonna write this the way that they did or what, you know. I mean, like Joe Hirsch had that great line, that paraphrasing, that was, there once was a horse named Kelso, but only once. I mean, that's brilliant. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't say that about another horse and steal Joe's line. I mean, you just don't do that. But you can get. You get work ethic. You can just, by watching what those guys did, how they did it, you know, you put that stuff in the memory bank, and it helps you in the long run. There's no question about that.
Yeah, very interesting stuff from Tim Wilkin here on HRRN. All right, Red Smith is honored today. We mentioned that. It's the Grade 2 Red Smith Stakes. It is a 1 3/8 turf event at Aqueduct, race number 9. And a really well-balanced field. I actually put a poll question out there this morning at the beginning of the show, Timmy, asking, because there are only 3 greatest stakes in the United States this afternoon, which of the 3 morning line favorites is most likely to win? And you take a look at this year's field in the Red Smith, and it's a really well-balanced group. You have Serve the King, who is the 3-1 morning line favorite for Chad Brown, but a well-balanced field.
Yeah, it is, and this is the last graded turf stakes in New York for males this year. You know, where does the year go, right? But here we are. I mean, it's a very, very contentious field, and you know, when it's on the grass in New York, you start with Chad Brown, right? I mean, Serve the King is just, I mean, he's their 3-1 morning line. 3-1 morning line favorite. He's dropping down. It's his fifth start this year. He's he was second in the grade one in the Joe Hirsch.
The Turf Classic. Yeah,
I mean, and behind his stablemate, Rock Emperor, who was last seen in the Breeders' Cup Turf, finished in 8th, I believe. The race is probably, you're not going to say the way race goes through that. I mean, it's. But you always have to look at anything Chad Brown runs on the grass in New York. He's got another horse named Value Engineering, who is making his stakes debut. 11 starts on the grass. He's been on the board in all of them. Chad Brown just doesn't enter for the sake of entering. I mean, he's entering because he thinks he has a chance. Just running down some of the others. I mean, Christophe Clement has Soldier Rising. Yesterday, I believe he got his 100th win of the season. The Clement barn did. This horse is making his fourth start since coming over from France. He's the only three-year-old in the race. And in his last race in the Hill Prince, he was going a mile and eighth. He had a lot to do in the stretch. He was seven wide. He was way back, came on to get fifth. I mean, he's an interesting horse that could get a piece of it. And it's interesting that jockey Javier Castellano, who is riding Shamrocket for Todd Fletcher, he rode four of these horses in their last start, and he landed on this one, so on Shamrocket. So I think he's got to be put in the mix too.
Yeah, I would say so. I think that's a powerful indicator. And then you have Channel Cat from Jack Sisterson's barn.
The only millionaire in the race.
Yeah, the only millionaire in the race. This horse can, on his day, he's as good as anybody.
And he's putting the blinkers on this time too.
Yeah. Yeah, and he gets Hall of Famer John Velasquez back in the irons. That bodes well for him, and we'll see if the Calumet Farm color bearer can maybe pull off a little bit of. He's 4-1. He's not a huge upset in there, but he is not the morning line favorite. We'll see if Channel Cat can find a way to get to the winner's circle there. Timmy, listen, it's been a delight to look back on Red Smith with you and talk a little bit about Joe Hirsch. It's always fun to do that with somebody who, you know, learned from them and watched them and observed, and now to see where you are today and what you've accomplished in your career is pretty cool. People are going to get a chance, as I mentioned, to hear you at the end of the program, 10:30 Eastern. Dale Romans will be here. You'll be back with us, and we'll talk about several topics that are really pressing in the sport of thoroughbred racing, and we'll touch on Pete Miller a little bit too and talk about his announcement, which came out on Thursday with him stepping away from the sport for a little bit. So we'll do that at 10:30, my friend, but can't thank you enough for being here this morning.
Hey, thank you, Mike, and I will be looking forward to being back with you in a couple hours.
All right, Tim Wilkin, longtime turf writer for the Albany Times-Union and now part of our team with I Ask, They Answer. You'll hear from him later in the program. That interview brought to you by Jellyfish Water. Remember, whether you are a jockey, an owner, a trainer, or a horse player, doesn't matter. There is always an opportunity to refresh and reset with every loss, and certainly a reason to rejoice with every win. Whatever the day brings you, at the tracker in life, doesn't really matter. You can reach for a bottle of Jellyfish Water to refresh, reset, and rejoice. Find your case of inspiration at jellyfishwater.com. I got my case the other day, by the way. My thanks to the team at Jellyfish Water for sending that out. And, yeah, great stuff. All right, when I come back after this Lexus Legends of the Turf, I will welcome in jockey Rajiv Miraj. That's Legends of the Turf, today's first bet, and then Rajiv Miraj coming up after that. But first, your Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington.
This man, during his lifetime of nearly 90 years, was synonymous with the thoroughbred racing as best as anybody could portray it. He was born in Fredericksburg, Texas, July 30th, 1880. That was the year the Great Hindu was a two-year-old, and a horse named Fonso won the Kentucky Derby over four rivals to earn $3,800. Our subject ran away from home at the age of 13 to become a jockey. He started as an exercise boy but wore silks in a race at the age of 14. That was long before he became a licensed jockey, although he had ridden at the age of 10 at Wild County Fairs in Texas. He never felt he was a good rider, but he had 1,117 recorded mounts and scored with 123 winners, a few of those against the likes of Immortals, Todd Sloan, and Snapper Garrison. He got too heavy to ride by the time he was 19, and therefore he opted for training to get his license at the age of 20 in 1900. He saddled his first winner in 1902, a horse named Guatama, at New Orleans on March 21st. Between 1902 and 1969, he saddled 1,993 winners, including the winners of more than 100 major stakes. His last winner was a four-year-old filly named Heartland, who won Aqueduct's feature by about 8 hours before he died on April 3rd, 1969. His first stakes winner was Beauclair, who took the Washington Cup at Benning's Racecourse near Washington, D.C. in 1907. He went on to train three Kentucky Derby winners and one Triple Crown winner. The latter was the great Clubfoot Comet Assault in 1946 in the brown and cream silks of the King Ranch. He saddled Bull Venture to win the 1936 Derby at 20-1, and another winner for the King Ranch Middle Ground in 1950. He had a rather unorthodox method of training horses, to say the least. Most trainers would not dare use an apprentice rider in a classic race. This man did it twice, in the Derby, and he won both of them. In 1936, when Ira Hanford on Bold Venture daringly fought through very tight quarters to score by a head over Brevity, and in 1950, when then 16-year-old Bill Bullen kept his mount on the rail to save ground the whole trip. He often said the best horse he had ever trained was Grey Lag, and he went on to say that Grey Lag may have been the singular best he had ever seen. He had bought him as a 2-year-old from the Wizard of the Turf, John E. Madden, and raced him until 3 when Harry Sinclair bought him for $60,000, an unheard-of price at the time. Grey Lag raced for Sinclair and then ran Coca's stable from then on. He was reluctant to use superlatives, but he did feel his best horses besides Grey Lag were Saracen and Assault. His greatest loss was not Grey Lag, it was Stymie, who earned nearly $1 million after being claimed for $1,500. He liked to bet on horses and at one time said, quote, "People who like horses like to bet on them. People who don't bet on them don't belong at the racetrack," end of quote. He was elected to the Racing Hall of Fame in 1959 and was honored by the Thoroughbred Club of America in 1961. Even after a heart attack in 1961, he went on to be leading money-winning trainer in New York. At the age of 87 and 8 in 1968, he won 49 races, and that year he trained Gallen Bloom, who was juvenile title holder of that year. He was stoop-shouldered, walked with a bit of a shuffle, with his hand always thrust forward as if something of extraordinary interest was to occur just in front of him. This truly great trainer went shuffling off, so to speak, to the great paddock in the sky, April 3, 1969, as an octogenarian at the age of 88. He was the man from Texas, Max Hirsch.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Coming this November, it's the America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards. Covering the best of the sport and lifestyle, all decided by the fans. Here's your chance to vote. The America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards.
Live racing is back at Churchill Downs October 31st through November 28th with the same strong purses we've had all year, and you are not going to want to miss it. Highlighted by the graded stakes such as the Grade 3 Chalukie, the Grade 2 Fall City, Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club, and the Grade 2 Goldenrod, along with the Grade 1 Clark, this November meet is sure to be full of excitement. For more racing information and to get your tickets today, visit ChurchillDowns.com. That's ChurchillDowns.com.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They come to the top of the lane. Teddy Promise on the inside. Groupie Dollars right there. Dance Card the Grey on the outside. Sweet Lulu tries to hang tough along the inside as well. Groupie Doll hanging on. Judy the Beauty's come back at them as well. And Dance Card on the outside. But it's Groupie Doll. Groupie Doll, Dance Card, Judy the Beauty going to hit it together. Groupie Doll along the inside. Groupie Doll, Judy the Beauty. Groupie Doll in a thriller. Groupie Doll beats Judy the Beauty. Dance Card was third. Summer Applause running on late to be in a photo with Sweet Lulu for fourth.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern Time. That was Trevor Denman with the call of the 2013 Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. It was won, as you just heard, by Groupie Doll, her second consecutive win in that race. She, ridden by jockey Raji Mirage, who is closing in on 2,000 wins in what has been a tremendous career for him. He's involved with a brand new endeavor that I'm going to tell you about shortly. But first, it is time for today's first bet and a look at the horse that you might want to play on this Saturday afternoon.
And now, today's first bet.
Today's first bet comes in race 9 at Laurel. 4:23 Eastern is the post. It is number 8, the Big Maz, who is 9-2 on the morning line, has a 31% win projection from first bet, rates 16 points higher than the next closest competitor, ranks number 1 in 3 of the top 9 handicapping factors for this race, according to first bet, and adds blinkers for the first time today, plus a return to dirt following a failed turf attempt last time out. The Big Maz has finished second in both prior main track starts. Number 8, the Big Maz, in race 9 at Laurel, is today's first bet. I'm back in 60 seconds right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number 1, st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
You know, for many years I have said that jockey Raji Mirage is one of the smartest riders in the sport, and he is one of the more underrated jockeys in the sport today. I told you he's closing in on 2,000 career wins, but earlier this month he launched a new company, and this is a company that he gets a leg up on, if you will, and he's hoping that this will be his next big winner. It is called Road Jockey. It launched in his native Jamaica, and he is with me now to tell you more about it on this pre-Thanksgiving show. Rajiv, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate you waiting a couple of minutes there as we brought people today's first bet. And looking forward to hearing more about Road Jockey. This is a really interesting concept. Tell me more about it.
Well, Road Jockey is a tech startup company. right now, we're really a tech solution company. So we started our first venture is delivery services in my native Jamaica, where we deliver products from the merchant to the consumer, and the consumer orders through our app, and we get it delivered using third-party independent contracted drivers. Basically, what they're doing all over the world right now with like DoorDash, Uber, and stuff like that. So that's what we're doing now. But the Road Jockey's solutions, there's also a future for other solutions, not only in the delivery services.
Yeah, tell me more about that. I think that's really where things start to get interesting.
Yeah, so basically our first venture, like we're talking about, is the delivery stuff. But obviously, you know that my passion is really horse racing. So, you know, down the line, there's some things that we think that we might want to implement and probably come into horse racing with Road Jockey tech services. But so there's some ideas there, but for now we're just kind of focusing on our first the first model, which is the delivery services.
Yeah, and you mentioned
through Jamaica and the Caribbean.
Yeah, you mentioned, oh, so it will be the entire Caribbean, not just Jamaica.
Yeah, Jamaica is just our launching ground, and then we intend to go through what they call the CARICOM, which is the Caribbean nations. Because what happened is, why I got into this is that I was talking to a friend of mine in Jamaica about less than a year ago, and they were craving delivery services because there they had strict lockdown with the COVID pandemic, and like there's some days that there's actually no travel in these countries. So, and they had no means of getting food and stuff delivered to them. So that's how we actually came up with the idea to start in these countries with that. So
there is no other food delivery service like this in the Caribbean?
Well, there are a bunch of them coming up now, like because there's such a big market for it.
Yeah.
But a lot of it isn't, they can't fulfill the demand because they don't have the proper adequate tech to push to be able to fulfill the demand. So most of it is just like small companies trying to get a piece of the market, whereas we're trying to grow something big where we can handle taking over the whole market.
You are the CEO of Road Jockey, Rajiv. Are there other folks that are involved in the thoroughbred business that are part of this with you?
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. They're one of the guys that is involved in it as well with me. He's owned horses before, but he's not currently involved in horse racing.
The one thing that struck me is when I was reading the story, one of the goals of Road Jockey is going to be to help decrease Jamaica's unemployment rate by creating what you hope will be about, 50,000 direct and indirect jobs over the next couple of years?
Exactly. I mean, we've seen a great response to that also because already the corporate side of Road Jockey in Jamaica already has quite a few employees. And when we launched the driver base of it, we had to shut it down after the first day because initially we were only trying to get 20 or so drivers just for the startup phase of it. In the first day, we had over 100 people try to sign up.
Wow.
So we had to halt. Yeah. So, and that's just in just one district in Jamaica, in Montego Bay. And that's not even the biggest district in Jamaica. So it's easy to say by the end of this year, we're going to have over 1,000 drivers on the driver's side. So
when do you hope to expand from Jamaica to the other islands and countries in the Caribbean?
Well, expansion is going to be easier once we get fully established in Jamaica. It's a lot easier to expand, but what we're trying to do is we're trying to perfectionize the technology before we expand.
Yeah.
So, but we feel like on the path that we're taking, we're looking at sometime next year into starting to expand outside of Jamaica. But first, we just want to kind of perfectionize our system.
I'm talking with Jockey Rajiv Miraj here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. He has launched his new delivery company in Jamaica, Road Jockey. It is off and running, and it is going to create an awful lot of jobs for that country over the next couple of years. And as you heard him say, it is a much-needed company, a much-needed service in his native country. So I'm curious, Rajiv, how'd you first come up with this idea? Were you just sitting around one day and you said, hey, this would be kind of cool?
Yeah, well, it was because I was talking to my friend that was there, and he was talking about the lack of getting stuff delivered to them, especially when they were confined to their homes and stuff. So then we started talking more and more about it because it's one of my friends that I talked to all the time down there. And he was frustrated because there was one day he tried to call to order food from a delivery service, and the demand is so high down there for delivery services, and they can't fulfill them. He didn't even get a return call 3 days later. He's like, where's my fried rice and chicken, right? So he was frustrated all the time, and he's like, man, I wish we could do something about it. And then we started dabbling with the conversation. After a few conversations on the phone, a couple of weeks, started messing with the idea of, man, if I was supposed to do something like this, I wouldn't want to just do something like everybody else. I just want to do something, try to be spectacular or different, try to do it on a large scale. That was what I was thinking. So I use services in America like this all the time, right? So I'm familiar with the way it works, but I didn't know how to build tech. So I reached out to someone that is in that field that I'm very close to, and then we started building a team. Of and it started making sense. So we did a business plan, started to think of, you know, how if it really made sense. Are we delusional or is there really, are we onto something here? And we, you know, I felt like, man, I'm definitely onto something. So I thought about two things. I said, I just want to give it my all. If I'm going to do it, I want to do it the right way. And the toughest thing about that was I felt like if I did that, I'm going to have to, like, put riding aside for a while. And I love to ride. I'm in great shape and everything. And that's what I've done all my life. But to do this thing at the best that I could do it, it's going to take so much out of me and so much dedication. And it's hard to live the life to be a jockey because that takes so much dedication as well. So right now I'm just like focusing on road jockey, trying to make that work.
And being a father now too.
And having a one-year-old, yeah. I've so you're back doing... and forth out of the country for like 8 times in the last 3 months with a one-year-old and riding as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, you're doing all of this on very little sleep, I think it's safe to say.
Yeah, exactly.
Could you look at road jockey and say one of the goals, even if you don't come out and say it right now, because nobody likes to think about hanging it up and retiring, but is this kind of something you can look at as you're building it for your retirement plan or your post riding plan when you finally do decide to say, hey, enough's enough?
You know, I didn't really look at it like that. How yeah. I looked at it was I looked at it like I'm 36 years old. If I invested a few years into road jockey, say 2 to 4 years, I'll be 40 years old. And if I decide that I still want to come back and ride, I can do that because that's still prime time age for a jockey. And, you know, I would have options. That's how I look at it. But I just thought that this opportunity is a great opportunity to expand my reach in life, you know. And so I didn't want to give that up. And I thought that the timing is right now because I'm still relatively young and I can ride when I, you know, if things go well, if I feel like riding, I come back to ride. If not, I'll be retired, I guess.
Yeah. You know what other than your love of the game, Rajiv, what still motivates you to get out there? You've been through so many serious injuries. You've come back from them. And you and I have talked about this before. I just give you all the credit in the world. You and every other jockey that comes back from these major injuries and hops back aboard a horse and gets back to the top of their game like you have. What is it that still drives you and motivates you?
Okay, like if I go to play soccer with my family, I try to play like I'm Cristiano Ronaldo, you know, give it my all, and I'm playing for nothing. We end up coming home with swollen ankles and busted up lips or whatever. We play basketball, the same thing. We try to dunk on each other. We can't even touch the net, you know? And it's the same thing when I go out to ride horses. I, you know, the competitive nature. I want to win. I enjoy it. When we're playing video games, we play hard. Like, it's our life depends on it, you know what I mean? So I think it's just the nature of competing. I've grown up in a big family, and we have a lot of cousins, and we played sports growing up. We raced, we did everything, and we love to compete. It's an enjoyment in life for me, to be honest, to ride horses, to go out there, compete, and win races. And, you know, especially now with my son, Luca, he's starting to understand a little bit. And the other day when I was riding at Gulfstream, I won 3 races that day, and he thought that he owned the winner's circle. So now I feel like, you know, I'm obligated to ride to make him come to the winner's circle and win races for him.
Would you want him to be a jockey?
I would not be against it. I would not be against it. You know, whatever he wants to do. My parents, they were worried about me being a jockey. Obviously, when they, you know, you see, they know how dangerous it is and stuff. And so I'm not saying that they were against it, but they were kind of worried all the time. But for me, I think that I would just want my son to do whatever he wants, whatever makes him happy.
Yeah, and Rajiv Miraj is doing exactly what makes him happy, riding races every day that he can and now focused on his new company, Road Jockey. I told you he was one of the smartest guys in the business, right? Just listen to him talk and you'll know why. Rajiv, listen, really appreciate
Thanks for the kind words.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, I don't know why that visual of jockeys dunking on each other in basketball is so hilarious to me, but it really is a fantastic image.
None of us can even touch the net.
Well, listen, man, I appreciate you taking some time today. All the best with Road Jockey. It was good to catch up, and all the best to you and the family.
All right. Thank you, Mike, and hi to all the listeners. Hope you guys enjoy your day, and hopefully everyone makes some money betting on some horses today, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I have to tell you something, right, before I let you go, that because of what you're doing and creating jobs in Jamaica and everything you're looking to create in the Caribbean, I thought it was appropriate that this interview, which is brought to our listeners every Saturday by Stuart Morris, that you would be our industry star of the week, because I think you embody what, you know, what this game is all about, giving back, trying to, and I know that it's going to be a company for you, but you're giving back to your homeland, and I think that's fantastic. So you are this week's industry star of the week.
Oh, man, I'm really honored. Thank you, man. That's really nice of you guys to think, you know, for that.
Yep.
Thank you.
All right, brother. Have a good weekend. We'll talk soon.
All right, Mikey. Thank you.
Rajiv Miraj. Yeah, this interview brought to you by Stuart Morris, who indeed offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is absolutely because of you, and with multiple stakes horses over the past several years that include Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gale and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. How great is Rajiv? I mean, so upbeat, so positive. You can't help but fall in love with the sport of thoroughbred racing again when you listen to Rajiv talk. Just fantastic, and good luck to him and his new company. When I come back, I'll get you set for the second hour of the program, and I'll tell you what's ahead in hour number three. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
And now, an important message from Jerry Rice.
As a career wide receiver, I've been hit hard. But no training nor practice prepared us for the devastation of COVID-19. Thankfully, there is hope. Even with multiple vaccines available, we still have to work together until everyone is safe. We all win when we unite to prevent.
For more information, visit unitetoprevent.org.
Hey, wouldn't it be great if life came with a remote control? You know, you could hit pause when you needed to, or hit rewind, like that time you knocked down that wasp's nest.
Uh-oh.
Or that time you forgot to roll up your windows in the car wash.
Fantastic.
Yeah, a remote control would have come in handy then. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. But prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Life doesn't come with a remote control.
Yikes!
So you're on your own with the wasps. You have the power to take control of prediabetes. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Hey, this is Bobby Newman. Join me every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern for Race Day, presented by Twin Spires. We'll be discussing all of the important happenings in the world of horse racing, as well as covering great live racing from tracks like Belmont, Aqueduct, Gulfstream, Oaklawn, Churchill, Santa Anita, and Del Mar. That's Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Sirius 219, XM 201, and online at Horse Racing Radio.net.
Hi, this is Jockey John Court. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Face off to the left of Varlamov. Right point, Shattenkirk. Fans on the shot, and it's chipped clear. Racing for it. Anders Lee. Lee in front, Everly. He scores! The Islanders win! And they're still alive! Jordan Everly in the second overtime at 12:30 wins it for the Islanders. They win it 2-1, and there will be a game six Thursday night.
That's Sam Rosen on NBC Sports Radio with the call. The Islanders opening their new arena tonight on the property of Belmont Park that is built adjacent to Belmont. Going to be interesting to see how that all plays out logistically with traffic and all that. I'm sure they've thought about it, but going to shed some light on that topic with Bob Ehalt, who is the New York-based turf writer. He grew up next to Belmont Park, essentially across the street, and we'll get a chance to talk to him. He had a piece in the Blood Horse this week talking about that. He talked to Naira about it and how they see this relationship working with the Islanders. That's all coming up to kick off hour number two momentarily. But, you know, hunting season is in full swing here in the Bluegrass, and if you are still looking for any of the products that you're going to need to get out in the woods, just go to Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. They are just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. Owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley, the Elite Outdoor Superstore has everything you need for hunting deer, turkey, ducks, and so much more, even two indoor archery ranges. So go check them out. It is the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. All right, hour two begins with Bob Ehalt momentarily. I'm also going to walk through all six races in that mandatory payout Rainbow Six at Gulfstream later today with Gulfstream handicapper Ron Nicoletti. That is later in the second hour, right around 9:35 Eastern time. In the Room with Sean Clancy comes up at 10 o'clock Eastern. He sits down with Charlestown's leading trainer, former jockey Jeff Runco. Kurt Becker stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland at 10:25. And at 10:30, I ask, they answer, trainer Dale Romans. Turf writer Tim Wilkin will be back with me. Make sure you're locked in for that one too. All of that still ahead right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Rolling on, busy morning. If you missed any portion of the first hour of the program or any of our shows, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast at your leisure. My interview with Tim Wilkin in the first hour of the program, talking about the late sports writer Red Smith. There is the Red Smith Stakes at Aqueduct today. Tim also talked about some of the contenders in there. Raji Mirage joining me just a short time ago as well. So you can head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and listen at your leisure. So many of you have done that with so many of our shows, and greatly appreciate you tuning in each and every week. Well, I told you that the Islanders are opening their new arena. It's been a project in the works now for a couple of years, and it is coming to fruition tonight when the Islanders welcome the Calgary Flames to that arena next to Belmont Park. And Bob Ehalt had a wonderful piece on the Blood Horse this week, kind of detailing some of the things that are going to have to be considered as we move forward with this relationship with the Islanders and with Belmont Park and the New York Racing Association. And Bob is kind enough to spend some time with me here this morning. Bob, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you today?
Doing well. Big night coming up on Long Island.
Yes, I mean, it's certainly a year. It's a couple of years in the making, a lot of excitement. The hockey fans are certainly excited because of the Islanders getting a new home that they hopefully will be able to settle in and have some success in. And certainly for horse racing fans, all of a sudden we're going from Belmont Park, which was kind of lonely for the last few decades, to a situation where the complex is going to be having a lot of people coming in on a regular basis. And, you know, the challenge for Naira is going to be how do you get at least a small portion of those fans to come over to the racetrack and maybe become new fans.
The new arena, and there's a picture of it, by the way, an overhead picture that was taken. It's posted on the Blood Horse in conjunction with your article. The arena is built literally in what was the parking lot of Belmont Park, and it's a great shot of how this all comes together. So you're right, there will be some logistical issues that are going to have to be sorted out here, Bob.
Yeah, one of the, like, I kind of was trying to look for examples of other places where this has taken place. I mean, they used to talk about Hollywood Park, its proximity to, say, where the Forum was in L.A., the closest thing to this really is probably the Meadowlands, where they're basically sharing the same parking lots and such. But even this one, the distance between the racetrack and the arena is virtually, they're literally right next to each other, because it is in that parking lot that was kind of right directly behind the grandstand, kind of over in the area by the quarter pole. So, it's impossible to go to one event without really knowing about the other. And that's going to be the key part of just how do you share the complex? Because certainly hockey is not going to come into play, or the concerts for the Belmont Park racing fans, until April when Belmont reopens. But, you know, down the road, Naira has talked about wanting to turn Belmont Park into the lone downstate track. And when that happens, there's going to be more conflicts and more dates of sharing, which opens up the possibility again for some spillover crowd. But also, how logistically are they going to handle getting the racing people out of the complex and the hockey people into the complex in a smooth fashion? I mean, Naira's hoping people will come early to take advantage of racing when possible, and then kind of leisurely go over to the racetrack. But certainly all of this is a new territory that it's going to be interesting to see how it all spills out.
Yeah, and it's not just the hockey crowd. They're also talking about having concerts at the new arena throughout the summertime too. So there will be that element that will have to be dealt with as Belmont is running their premier races.
Yeah, that just adds into it. And, yeah. And I mean, even beyond hockey, you're going to see there's like Disney on Ice, there's Monster Jam, there's wrestling, there's college basketball games that they're going to be having. So this complex is really going to be getting quite a bit of activity. You know, I saw some names like John Mayer and Genesis already coming into the arena, which should bring big crowds. So it's going to bring a lot of people into Belmont Park. And interestingly, as some people will note, although it's in a huge population area, because of racing's really not being the kind of attraction like you might get from, like, say, a professional sports team, there's a lot of people in that area who have not gone inside Belmont Park. So one of the things I think they might have going for it is when people come in and see Belmont Park, you see the aesthetic part of it with its backyard and such, maybe they are going to become fans. And I think it does put a premium on what kind of marketing and crossovers Naira's going to do to try to convince those fans to come over rather than really just sit back and hope they will show up.
Not only, Bob, did you have a chance to talk with the Islanders' connections in your piece that appears on bloodhorse.com, you also talked with Naira CEO and President David O'Rourke, and he referred to the fact that the arena marks an entirely new era for Belmont Park. How is Naira looking at the situation going forward?
Well, Naira, you know, one of the interesting things, if you look back in the early 1960s, when they knew the Belmont Park grandstand was decaying, falling apart, and had to be restored, no one back then really knew that there was going to be OTB. And if because of that, that's why they built this huge complex that could fit the 30 or 25,000 people a day that they were getting. No one, you know, no one could envision that that gravy train they had was going to stop. And then the track reopens in 1968, and in 1971, you have off-track betting coming, and all of a sudden, track attendance is declining, and you have, shall we say, kind of the ghost town you have in this massive facility that you have today. Right now, NYRA, as it looks to kind of, as it looks to revamp Belmont Park, NYRA now does know its future. It has a campus, as they call it, that's going to have this arena, that's going to bring in people. And I think this does give NYRA the opportunity to create a future of where it could fit in with this hockey team. That you're probably going to see a smaller, you're going to see a smaller version of the grandstand at Belmont Park when they do it. And in doing that, trying to create the kind of open space and areas that will play well with the new arena for people who maybe come out early, maybe want to take part of it. You'll see use of the infield like you don't see now at Belmont. But as I say, the good part for NYRA is it knows what its future is going to look like 20 years from now, as opposed to, say, when they remodeled the track in the early 60s, where they were kind of hit by a curveball with the emergence of OTB.
Talking with turf writer and blood horse contributor Bob Ehalt here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Bob, is NYRA also trying to, and Belmont Park trying to position themselves for a scenario where eventually sports betting is legalized in New York and they can be in a position to capitalize on that with this new campus?
Sure. I mean, I'm sure that NYRA would be delighted to add sports betting. You see how in New Jersey it's very effective for Bobbitt Park. I think the same could be done at NYRA. That might be one of the holdups what kind of room, say, will you try to create for it? Can you get it? But I think the good part is that you have enough room at Belmont Park where you can build an effective sports book. And certainly I think anybody who's looking at the numbers and the business that the sports betting is attracting, you want a part of it. Now, granted, it's not parimutuel wagering where, you know, every time a bet is made, somebody generates money off of you. You know, if you have a bad stand on a game, yes, you the book could get clobbered. But still, there's so much interest and activity in the wagering on sports betting. You are going to probably inevitably get shares of that going to horse racing as people look for more action. But yeah, definitely, it's really a shame in New York that they really haven't been spurred into action to start wagering. When you look at the phenomenal success New Jersey has enjoyed with sports betting, where New Jersey has actually kind of surpassed Nevada in some forms of handle. So hopefully that will be a part of NYRA's future in the not-too-distant future.
It sounds to me then like this is very much a positive for NYRA, for racing at Belmont Park, as long as they can figure out the logistics of how this is all going to come together and make it easy for people to get in and out. It sounds like this could be a big positive going forward.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, yeah. I think that's part of it. There's going to be a learning curve, and part of the learning curve might be helped by the fact that you don't have to really worry about it until April, where you could work. Dave said in the interview, he believes they're going to try to finish up racing by 6 o'clock so that they could get everybody out. I don't know. That might be a bit of a tight window to get people out of the complex and into the complex, because you, as of now, you really don't have a lot of areas of access to get into the track. And the big tiered parking lot that's going to be open. The train might help with that situation if a lot of people decide to take the Long Island Railroad, which is going to have a time schedule that will help with things. But, that's the part that they're going to have to see of how much of a headache, because you aren't going to have traffic jams. For people to think that there's not going to be traffic jams if you're familiar at all with the area around Belmont Park, that's really, I think, that you're not really being open-minded about it, because you're talking about the arena, for the most part, having starts that are going to conflict with rush hour traffic on the Cross Island Parkway, which is the main road taking you there. So when you take the inherent traffic that you have on that road and the crowd of 17,000 heading into that area, of course you're going to have traffic jams getting into it. At night, the situation's a lot better because the roads are just not as busy at 9:30 or so at night. But, as I say, it's going to be interesting to see how bad the traffic jams are. I personally remember from being old enough and growing up in Queens Village, yeah, that area was a congested city back in the days of when the new Belmont reopened in the early 60s, and there were 25,000, 30,000 people a day going to the racetrack. And that's probably going to be the same situation when you have an arena event.
Well, Bob, New York was certainly in the headlines this week, not necessarily because of the Islanders and what's happening there. That was part of it, but the other big storyline that came out involved potential legislation expected to be introduced to eliminate funding from video lottery terminal gaming toward the state's horse racing industry. What can you tell me about that? I know it wasn't your story. It was covered by Byron King, but certainly you're in tune with what's happening there too.
Yeah, this seems to be a trend. And I think a lot of times it's that certain politicians want to get headlines. They tell a story that's really just not accurate. Whereas they make it sound like horse racing is just getting this huge amount of money from the federal government out of the kindness of the government's heart. And there's nothing correct at all about saying that. For these people who think, oh, we're going to take this money away from horse racing, they really ignore the fact of the amount of money horse racing generates for the government. I mean, if you take away all the money that the state makes off wagers, off the salaries of people, off the items the racetrack sells, the taxes off the items that the racetrack and breeders and everyone in the state buys, New York State makes a massive amount of money off horse racing. And you know, it's just a shame that I hope more people could just see through that this is hardly the case. This is not some sort of a welfare program. This is basically giving back into an industry a portion of the money that you take away from it that hurts its ability to operate. And certainly, I do hope that there are enough smart politicians in New York State who see through these things as really just publicity stunts that they are. You've seen some other states having the same thing happen, and it generally gets voted down. I hope the same thing happens in New York, because certainly the basic propaganda put through about spending money to support horse racing could be better spent elsewhere. Well, if you stopped horse racing in New York State tomorrow, taxes would go up in New York State, because they would need to make up a lot of money that horse racing generates for the state. And hopefully, again, this is more just a stunt than a real movement within the state.
Well, Bob, listen, you are you've seen this come and go over the years, waves after waves of news coming out with NYRA and with New York Racing, and some good, some bad, but the waves keep coming, and this is just the latest now, right?
Yeah, I mean, horse racing sometimes horse racing just, I think, does not take an aggressive enough stand to try to promote itself and to protect itself and stand up. There was a lot of times where horse racing in the past, I think it like shied away because it felt it's a gambling entity and people don't like gambling. And oh my gosh, we have to cower if someone comes after us. Well, I think what you're seeing these days about sports betting is showing there is phenomenal interest in this country about gambling. And NYRA should not have to really run away from a lot of the things it does. And as I say, sometimes, you know, when you say a thing a certain way, like I hear talk about, well, horse racing has X kind of economic impact on the state of New York. It supplies X amounts of jobs. Yeah, I think that's helpful. But sometimes you got to go beyond that and say, kind of directly, without horse racing, New York's tax rate would be higher. New York, and that there's so much contributions that the money that horse racing already gives sustains it. That there are it's not just a rich man's game. There are a lot of people who are barely making a decent living who rely on working at the racetrack. So it's not just the type of sport that people want to portray it to try to create some sort of a marketing image or such, or go after it because of its demographics. That's not really it. And I say, I do think sometimes horse racing has to fight back a little bit.
Yeah.
And push back like other sports do. Otherwise, yeah, there is going to be people will keep coming after you because, again, you become a good target for a soundbite or a soundbite for someone, as opposed to people understanding the important role you play in the day-to-day operation of the state.
Yeah, you better defend your player. And I've said that for many years on this program. Racing typically doesn't do a good enough job of taking that strong stance when outside entities come after it and try to paint it in a bad light. Yes, as an industry, horse racing has its problems, but what industry, what sport does not? And I've said for a long time that you better promote the positives and point out all of the good things that are taking place when people come after you. Otherwise, as you said, you're just a sitting duck, you're a target, and people are going to keep taking their shots.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a different topic, but I think one of the good examples of that involves the use of the jockeys of the riding crops. I've held that in my hand. I've hit myself with a riding crop of a Johnny Velasquez uses. They do not hurt. So if you want to talk about the look of it and what's being done with the riding crops, that's fine. But the bottom line is these are not hurting the animals. They can't. They're just not constructed on that. They're not made of materials that will hurt a horse. It makes a heck of a noise. But it doesn't, and I challenge anybody who has held that whip and made use of it and tell me this hurts you. It doesn't hurt. You feel it. You don't hurt. But and sometimes horse racing allows that to become part of the issue, which is not a correct part of it, as opposed to, yes, okay, we'll talk about how people look and see it. But yeah. At least I think the argument is easier for people if you're just talking about what the argument really is rather than let other people frame the issue that this is something that's really cruel to an animal. I've said that with a human being with those crops, the only way you hurt yourself is really if you poke yourself in the eye with it.
Yeah. But yeah. And a lot of that comes back to education, right? Educating the public and letting people know it's not like the old days. In the old days, yes, the crops would actually hurt and they would leave welts on horses. This is a whole different technology now and simply a tool used by riders to keep them safe.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And so that's where I think part of the industry has to look at. You need to frame they should not be afraid of framing issues properly and going against its critics and trying to show them that, no, the sport is not bad. Yes, there are bad apples of the sport. There's no doubt about it. The bad apples need to be removed from the game. We need to denounce them where we can. But there's also, I think, when you walk through a backstretch of a racetrack, especially at the Naira Circuit, you see nothing but love and care for these animals. And you know, you wish that's kind of the image that would get out a little bit more of really how these animals are really treated as pets and loved by the people. And it's certainly not the image people take when they find some kind of isolated incident somewhere. So. Again, yeah, it is a question of trying to educate people and show people what the sport really is.
Yeah. Yeah, you can head over to bloodhorse.com to read all of Bob's articles on the Islanders on Naira and their approach and their philosophy when it comes to the arena, and all of the different pieces he produces there for Blood Horse and all of his different stories. Does a fantastic job. You can follow him on Twitter at Bob Ehalt. That's Bob Ehalt. Bob, listen, appreciate the visit this morning. Great stuff, and we'll catch up soon, my friend.
Mike, thank you very much. Appreciate the chance to talk with you.
All right. Bob Ehalt here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Yeah, some great comments, and I have said that. You've heard me say it on this show many, many times over the years, that you better defend your player. And when people come after racing, there are so many positives, so many good things. There are bad things, too, but there are so many positives that outweigh the negatives. Unfortunately, the negatives always seem to overwhelm the general public, and that's all we hear about. But the sport itself, you know, would benefit from a PR firm that would get out there and promote the sport in a very positive light and point out, not make things up, but point out factually all of the good things that take place in the sport of thoroughbred racing, the behind-the-scenes stories that you never hear about. It's what we try to do every other week here on the show with Unsung Heroes and let you know about the folks that make our sport a success that never find themselves in the headlines. But the sport itself has so many positives, so many great things to promote. And, again, a positive PR firm that could get the word out would certainly be welcome for thoroughbred racing, no doubt about it. All right, when I come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the other races taking place today, including the Chalukya at Churchill Downs, and get you ready for Ron Nicoletti. He comes up right around 9:35 Eastern. He will walk through that pick six sequence, mandatory payout at Gulfstream today. He's going to walk through all six races for you coming up in about 10 minutes. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Champions are returning to Gulfstream for the championship meet starting December 3rd until April 3rd. Witness the best thoroughbred racing Wednesday through Sunday with weekly stakes races. Returning for its sixth year this January is the 2022 Pegasus World Cup with world-class racing, delectable cuisine, stunning celebrities, and iconic fashion. New for 2022 is the third graded stakes race, the Pegasus Turf for fillies and mares with a $500,000 purse. Tickets go on sale November 8th. Visit PegasusWorldCup.com to learn more and get tickets.
Coming this November, it's the America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards. Covering the best of the sport and lifestyle, all decided by the fans. Here's your chance to vote. The America's Best Racing Fan Choice Awards.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
It's Dale Rockefeller holding on to the lead and all out here in the stretch. It is Rockefeller who now has opened up by three. And it will be Rockefeller and Louis Saez to win the Grade 3 Nashua.
Rockefeller, the son of Darley stallion Medaglia d'Oro, was an impressive winner of the Grade 3 Nashua Stakes, a $750,000 yearling. Rockefeller is living up to his lofty standards, and his big win makes him your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley stallion Medaglia d'Oro. Known as a sire of big price sale horses, Medaglia d'Oro is out on his own with 27-figure yearlings since 2016. Learn more about Medaglia d'Oro and all the Darley stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is Eddie Delahousie. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Spelling Again takes the lead. Right outside the quarter pole, it's Spelling Again in front. Gold Medal Dancer second to the outside. Hot Chocolate is there, coming four wide off the turn. Bird at the wire, set to strike, needs to find a way out. Serene Melody down toward the rail. They head for that final furlong. Spelling Again driving on a two-length lead. Hot Chocolate on the outside, plugging away, still second. Gold Medal Dancer and Serene Melody from the back. It's Ambusher with a 16th to go. Spelling Again has kicked away, and Spelling Again finishes full of run to win the Chalukya by four. Ah, Chocolate and Gold Medal Dancer in a photo for second. Serene Melody was fourth.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN. Travis Stone with the call of the 2015 running of the Chalukya at Churchill Downs. That one going to Spelling Again under Sean Bridgemahan for trainer Brad Cox. Brad, of course, back in this year's Chalukya as well, looking to win it again. Dell Romans is back, too. Dell Romans will saddle Sally's Curlin, who won the race 2 years ago in 2019 and looking to get another victory here in the Chalukie, don't count out Sally's Curlin, making her second start off of a bit of a freshening. Ran really well with Allowance Company last time out at Keeneland, is 3-for-7 at Churchill. Winless this year, actually only one win since 2019, which doesn't bode well. But she can finish. You know, I'm a fan of those late pace numbers in the Brisnet PPs. Sally's Curlin is right there with all of the other horses in that Grade 3 Chalukie at Churchill later today. A well-balanced field. Our poll question today, you can go to at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or if you don't do social media, email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. Which morning line favorite is most likely to win today? There are only three greatest stakes in the United States this afternoon. Obligatory in the Chalukie, Serve the King, who is the morning line favorite in the Red Smith, or Eight Rings in the Native Diver. So far, 37% of you are saying Serve the King in the Red Smith is the most likely of the three to get the victory. Obligatory, only 20% of you thinking Obligatory is going to win that Chalukie today. Obligatory, a three-year-old taking on older horses for the first time. I can see that. She's run good. She's run really good. Her late pace numbers are very strong. She can finish. But is she good enough to beat some of these older mares that she will tackle today? I can see that. The fourth choice, by the way, is that all three of those morning line favorites will win. I personally think that's a bit of a stretch. I think all three of those races are extremely well balanced. I could see a scenario where all three of them get beat. Chris chimes in and says, no chalk for me. In the Chalukie, it's Miss Bigley, the Red Smith, Shamrocket, and in the Native Diver, Midcourt. Anthony chimes in too and says, they'll go 0-for-3. I can see that. I guess maybe that's even a better question. All three win or all three lose? Which side are you taking there? If you had a prop bet that you could take all three morning line favorites in those three greatest stakes later today, all three win or all three lose? I think all three lose would be the better play and probably favored in that wagering. Maybe not. Maybe the way prop bets go, you'd probably have the other side favored. All three win just because they're all morning line favorites. So theoretically, they're all expected to win the respective races. So that would probably be the favorite. You probably get better value with all three morning line favorites getting beat. And I think that is a plausible situation later today. Miss Bigley, who I just mentioned, five-year-old mare by Gemologist, has run really well here in 2021. 8 starts, 3 wins, 2 seconds, 2 thirds, 1-for-4 at Churchill, and really hasn't tackled this type of company. So a bit of a step up for Miss Bigley, too. We'll see if she can find a way to get to the winner's circle in there. But I think, you know, Sally's Curlin, very interesting. Can you ever count out Brad Cox? Certainly at Churchill Downs here with Matera. Florent Giroux was aboard Matera. Comes out of that Grade 3 Locust Grove. Fourth place finish there behind She Dares the Devil. Maybe Matera, but I think if you're looking for an upsetter, I think you look to Sally's Curlin, the 2019 winner. I'm going to, well, we won't talk to Dale about that, but Dale will be with me in the final segment of the show at 10:30 Eastern. I Ask, They Answer. He and Tim Wilkin will be with me. And Tim walked through in the first hour of the program, if you missed it, Tim walked through the Red Smith at Aqueduct and talked about all of the different contenders in there, because that's another well-balanced, wide-open field. So let me know your thoughts on that poll question. Go to our Twitter feed at HRRN, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. Don't forget, too, that you can hear analysis of all of those greatest stakes races and all the stakes action around the country today with Bobby Newman on the Weekend Stakes Preview. That podcast is now posted on our website, horseracingradio.net. the podcast and the entire show presented by our friends at Naira Bet. So head back over and take a listen before you bet the races today. All right, when I come back, we're going to dive into that mandatory payout Rainbow Six at Gulfstream. I'll do it with Gulfstream analyst Ron Nicoletti. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The thrill of thoroughbred racing is back at Laurel Park. The brand new dirt surface and world-class turf course are ready for the races. Spend an afternoon dining with someone special at your choice of restaurants. Grab a bite with friends at the food court or relax and enjoy racing action from around the world in the sports bar. Laurel Park has it all. The beer is cold, the action is hot, and the horses are fast. Nothing beats a day at the track. Live racing Thursday through Sunday, post time, 12:40 p.m.
Hello, this is Bill Mott. You're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And midway on the far turn, Old Dominion's been there throughout. Flow Motion moving in a half length behind him, second. Two more back to Belgrano, third. Martini Kid is next. And then Bold Daddy down on the inside. Tree Shaker is trying to get involved late as Flow Motion is up to take the lead. Belgrano on the outside moving into second with a dangerous late kick. It's Flow Motion or Belgrano. Flow Motion just in front. Flow Motion. Flow Motion wins by a length. Belgrano was second. Third went to Old Dominion. Multiple horses in the fourth place photo, including Tree Shaker.
Flow Motion to win in race 10 at Monmouth. That was on the 4th of July last year, 2020. Frank Miramati had the call. Flow Motion 4-1 on the morning line in the final leg of today's mandatory payout Rainbow Six at Gulfstream. That's right. It all has to go. So a good day to be playing the races down in South Florida. Nobody knows that better than our friend Ron Nicoletti, who is on top of all the action down there. Fantastic handicapper. He's put his Pick Six ticket together. This interview, as I welcome Ronnie to the show, brought to you by our friends at Jellyfish Water. Ronnie, good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Mike. Nice to talk to you.
Excited for this Rainbow Six today. Whenever you get these mandatory payout days, it just kind of it takes things to a new level, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. The excitement, you know, just it ratchets up, and, you know, they're expecting a little over $3 million to bet into it today. I think going in, we got $450,000 live money. So, you know, that adds to it. So it's up for the taking. And what's interesting about this one is this is the first time with a mandatory payout that four of the six races are on the new Tapeta surface. So I find that totally interesting. And, you know, it's a new situation down here. So it's going to take a little bit of handicapping to get this thing done.
Have you noticed any trends that folks can keep an eye on when it comes to those races on the Tapeta?
Yeah, you know, we've been watching them. And in the beginning, the first couple of weeks, because the track has to settle, it was just basically, you know, mid-race starkers or closers. And it seemed to level out. We had like a spurt where four or five races, the front runner won. So it seems to be leveling out. And there's no, like an old bias where you say, oh, it's speed. You got to have the speed. It seems to be pretty good. And it's really a jockey's race on the Tapeta, you know, with the fact that we have the new whip rule. So you just got to sort of get your horse in the right position to make that charge down the stretch. The most amazing thing about it, Mike, is the second day it was in, we had one of these, you know, belly washes here in South Florida, which we've been dealing with, and that track was perfect. It was one of the guys, you know, saying, I don't know if this is going to work out, and it has been fantastic so far as when it's raining. Now, it's a slow track. We know that. You know, it takes, they said, 6 months to a year to get it to where they want it. So it's been fun.
Yeah, that is one of the benefits of an artificial racing surface. Ronnie, is the plan that, say, for example, in the championship meet, if we get a day where it pours down rain like you just talked about, and those, let's face it, they happen in South Florida. If we get a day like that, races are taken off the turf. Will they be moved to the Tapeta surface so that some of those turf horses stay in and we keep bigger fields?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the plan, you know. And I don't think they're going to write – the plan is not to write that many Tapeta races, you know, four in the card, maybe one a day. But it's basically going to be used for exactly what you said, you know. Chris, you know, the last 2 days here in South Florida, you know, in the afternoon it's been pouring, you know. So we were making a joke yesterday that they should have taken the main track races off and put them on the Tapeta because the Tapeta was perfect yesterday. So it's a new situation. It's been fun handicapping it. You know, sometimes you're scratching your head, but that's what makes it all the more fun.
When you look at a day like today and you have that mandatory payout in the Rainbow Six, does that change the way you approach structuring your ticket and the horses that you choose?
Yeah, you know, because absolutely, when the tickets I put together is what I can afford, basically, during the week. I don't like to put up a $200 ticket, you know, for the folks out there, you know, to bet. If they, you know, they don't need me to tell them if they spend $200 on a ticket. So I like to keep it $40, $30. But when it comes a day like this, you know, it's beautiful. Of course, you're not dealing with any takeouts or anything. You know, I send it in, so I'll get a $100 ticket. I'll put it together, you know, if I can get a partner or something like that. And, you know, the key to this I found is you got to find that one race where you might be able to single or use two horses and go deep in some of these races that are just so hard to handicap. So, you know, that's my thought about it. I try and zero in on something I really like, you know, best bet or whatever, and I try and build my ticket around that. And, you know, after you add it up at the end, you either say, this is good, or wait, I got to go back and change this a little bit, you know.
Well, let's start with race number five. That's the first race in the sequence. We'll walk through all six races and kind of get your thoughts on who you think might be live in those races. And the fifth race, here we go. Mile and 70 yards, $20,000 claiming event. Now winners of two, Lifetime. You know, maybe for a lot of people, a bit of a head scratcher. Tell me about this one.
Well, you know, I went with the four horse in there, Katie's Dream Girl. I actually like this horse a lot today. 6-1 in the morning line. I'll tell you about wheeling back in 6 days. So just ran 6 days ago, but dropped to the 20 level. And I like the fact that this horse is stretching out. Broke out with it at the start and then showed some rally in the end. And trained by Ralph Nix and ridden by Chantal Sutherland, who's just been on fire lately. And she's I think she's tied for most wins. I'm talking about this is on the Tapeta, most wins on the Tapeta with 13 or 14 or something like that. I just think this horse at 6-1 actually made this one my best bet on the card. No, my long shot on the card today at 6-1. So I thought that horse had a chance. I mean, you got to sort of use Quiet Strength, Eddie Plessis Jr., Rose and Star, but you're right. So this is where if you find that single, you got to go deep somewhere because it's not an easy one to start.
So is Katie's Dream Girl strong enough to single in this spot for you?
Almost. You know, I'm going to go too deep probably in there with the Quiet Strength, who I like for Eddie Plessis Jr. You know, just one ran back. I like the fact that this horse is turning back. And what I've been doing is I've been sort of keying the horses that already have a race over the surface, you know. So I like to see how they ran, come back, and I've been having some success with that. And that's the case with the 11 Quiet Strength.
What's the weather like down there today, Ronnie? And what do we expect the main track and turf to be?
Well, the main track is fast right now, but as I said, we've been bombarded by rain over the last 2 days. So, I mean, we got the old weather. The main track, right now it's beautiful out, you know, a breezy day. So by post time, the main track will absolutely be fast unless one of these storms roll in. So we'll see how it plays out. So you gotta really watch the main track. It's a Tapeta. That's the beauty of it. You know, it doesn't matter if it rains.
Race six, the second leg of the Rainbow Six, 6 furlongs on that main track. It's a $50,000 maiden claimer. Another well-balanced field here. How about this race?
Yeah, I went with the two dignified. He's turning back to the 3/4 today. Responded to the equipment change. They took the blinkers off this horse, and it became a new horse. It was a really well-manned second in there. You're getting Paco Lopez in the saddle today. Thought that was, you know, the one to beat. Now I use also the eight, Illogical Love. It's the daughter of a classic Empire. Debuting for Safi, Joseph Jr., and Edgar Zayas. Just the other day, Edgar had 4 wins on the 8-race card, and Safi had 3 of those 4 wins. So, I'm not leaving him off the tick. And then I use the outside horse, also the outside, the 11 Prompt. It was the daughter. They're more than ready. You know, the barn is okay. Chantel in the saddle, but I think the race goes through the two dignified.
All right, so we're, what, 2x3 so far to kick it off? 4-11 with 2-8-11?
Yeah.
All right, race 7, third leg, halfway home, $20,000 claimer, mile and 16th on that Tapeta surface. Tell me about this one.
I went with the 5 Midnight Bellas, hoping for clear ceiling. Had some, actually had nowhere to run in the stretch last time out, so a little bit of a trip note here. Finished 4th at the same level in distance for Gerald Brooks. Miguel Vasquez in the saddle today, so I thought that was a logical one, but I also used a little bit go to goes to the Gilberto Zerpa barn. It was like 29% first off the claim. Widow leading rider, Edgard, and then map him up from Timmy Hills, who's coming in from Monmouth. It ran really good on the turf up there, so I thought maybe that horse had a shot to run on the all-weather today.
Yeah, that's one of the unknowns, right? I know they say turf horses run better on the synthetic. It was like that when they had it in at Keeneland, and you look at Turfway and tracks like that. But you really don't know for sure if the horse is going to handle that new surface.
No, you make a great point. Did you show me the stats? I haven't seen it. You know what I mean? We've been keeping record, and they could be on any previous surface and run okay. They just got to like it.
Well, the nice thing is that you're getting 15-1 on the morning line on Map 'Em Up. So if the horse likes it, you can really put yourself with a little bit of distance in between some of the other folks that are playing that Rainbow Six. I know it's a mandatory payout, but boy, you pop a couple of those long shots and you're looking at the lion's share.
Yeah, you can get a nice payoff. I mean, even if you just get on days like this, if you got a decent ticket, you could make $8,000-$9,000, even if you share it with a bunch of people, you know.
Walking through today's mandatory Rainbow Six sequence with Gulfstream analyst Ron Nicoletti here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We've taken a look at the first three. Race 8 is the fourth leg. It is a $6,250 claiming event, $6,250, 1 mile on the main track. What do you think, Ronnie?
Yeah, you know, these horses take turns beating each other, you know. So I went with Mr. Tito's, who's going to try and make it two in a row. He really had a good performance last night, breaking from post 12. He rallied 5 wide. I used Here Comes a Bullet with Bob Hess Jr. I like the work that the jockey Edwin Gonzalez does. And then what do you do with Dr. J, who was solid? You go back and look at this race. He looked like he went into overdrive at the 16th pole, and he almost caught Mr. Tito at 20-1. So I use those three. Here's the race where if you got that single, I think this is where you got to go deep. I'm going 3 deep, but I'll listen to anybody in this particular spot.
Do you ever hit the all button in any of these races in your Rainbow Six if you can afford it?
Yeah, definitely. You know, if I could find those two singles, you know, and you try and do that, that's the great thing. But I'm telling you, there's no – I do not see a single here today for myself. I'm only speaking for my ticket. So if you can, more power to you, anybody out there.
Yeah, it's a tough sequence. Race 9 is a mile and a 16th, optional claimer, $20,000. It's the penultimate race in the sequence, another race where you can go a couple different ways, I would imagine.
Yeah, I went with the 6 Ripping Spirit, who's stepping up the competition, defeated those 22 lifetime claimers. But check this stat out. David Falk is 10 for 20, 50% on the Tapeta. We call him the Tapeta King. I was just walking in with him today, this morning, and making fun of him. He goes, how come you don't have me on there? I'm the Tapeta King. Amazing. Yeah, the record. So, you know, playing the percentages there, and Chantal in the saddle, so 50%. So he is stepping up the horse. I used Cats of Dream, too, who defeated Riveting Spirit a couple of starts back. And then appointed it goes to the Amanda de la Serta bond. I just thought that Riveting Spirit here is where I like. I did go 3 deep, but I think you can maybe zero in. If you play the percentages, they're right there in paper, you know, in black and white.
Yeah, you know, 50% strike rate, that's almost strong enough, at least just based on numbers, to go ahead and single Riveting Spirit.
Yeah.
And Ronnie, you're getting 6-1 on the morning line.
Yeah, no, I like this horse. You know, the races were so hard. Thank goodness I don't have to make the morning line anymore after the last 4 or 5 years. You know, but yeah, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's going to be that. I really believe it's going to be that kind of day.
You know, this last leg, last race in the sequence, race number 10. Yeah. Boy, this is. I'll tell you, you could go – this is where I want to hit the all button because I looked at this race and I could not figure out who on earth I thought would win. I played the little rejoin clip there leading into your interview of Flow Motion winning on the 4th of July last year at Monmouth. It was hard to find horses with wins on their page here.
Yeah, that one from the Jane Sibelli one. But, yeah, I like – a horse in here today. I'm not going to say love, but I like, and it's the three Hawaiian Notes, and I'll tell you why. If you look at this horse's record, it doesn't show on the paper. Perfect 2-for-2 on synthetic surfaces. Goes to the Peter Waldebond after that claim. Tries the Tapita today. First start, he rallied. You go back, he ran really nice, going 9 furlongs in the main track up at Saratoga. The barn, you know, is good with new claims. You know, Jesus Rios is an okay rider. And I just think, you know, these are the angles I've been using. I look back and say, hey, this horse has won on synthetic track somewhere. You know, Peter Waller, I would expect first off the claim. So I like Hawaiian Noises today. I use Timmy M in second and Digital Footprint in, on my ticket. But Hawaiian Noises, you know, here's the one if I felt positive about somebody that might win. It's this horse here, number 3, Hawaiian Noises.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun day at Gulfstream. And, of course, all this in advance of the championship meet, which we're less than, what, 2 weeks away from the start of the championship meet?
Yeah, tomorrow's closing day here. We're off for about, I think, 9 or 11 days. We come back on December 2nd, Friday, December 2nd, for the championship meet. And I can't wait. I've been working alone for the last week. I can't wait for Acacia and everybody to get back so I can get my voice back.
Yeah, I believe it. It's been a trying summer for you, having to do all that talking and carry the ball again. But I'm going to tell you, Ronnie, there's nobody better down there. You've been doing it a long time.
Well, I appreciate that. So let's get lucky today. If we both hit it, this is a deal we have. If I hit it or you hit it, the other guy takes the other guy to dinner.
Deal. Absolutely.
Deal.
If not, we both lose, we'll get Larry Colmus to take us to dinner.
Yeah, shorthand? No. We'd be stuck paying.
All right, buddy. Good luck in the Rainbow Six.
Same to you. Bye.
All right, Ron Nicoletti here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Fantastic. One of the real good guys in the sport of thoroughbred racing. That interview, by the way, presented by Jellyfish Water. Whatever your day brings at the track or in life, reach for a bottle of Jellyfish Water to refresh, reset, and rejoice. Jellyfish Water is not a flavored water or a fitness water. It is a philosophy water. It is about being persistent in your efforts and getting to the winner's circle in life. Find your case of inspiration at jellyfishwater.com. Well, you can see Ronnie's ticket, and I'll recap it for you here. I've got a couple of minutes before I have to get to this commercial break. He's going, and I'm just going to give you the numbers. In the first leg, race number 5, he's going 4 and 11. Race 6, he's going 2, 8 and 11. Race 7, 5, 4, 3. Well, let's see. It'd be 5, 6, 7. This would be race 8, the fourth leg. 3, 8, 2. Race 9, he's going 6, 5, and 7. And 3, 1, 2 in the last leg to wrap it up. That's how Ronnie sees the Rainbow Six sequence. I'm sure you can go to GulfstreamPark.com and see his entire ticket. They usually post his selections up there. So that's on the Gulfstream website, too. We'll see. Mandatory payout. Get your tickets in and see if we can't get lucky coming up later today. All right, when I come back, I'll take a look at some historical dates in racing history, update you on the poll question, and look ahead to hour number 3, which is jam-packed. It wraps up with this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin, 10:30 Eastern. You will not want to miss that. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
160 facilities, 7,800 horses, 1 accreditation. The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance is the only accrediting body in thoroughbred aftercare and is supported by all aspects of the thoroughbred industry. To learn more or to support the TAA, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
People do some pretty cool things in their 40s and 50s. Why should saving for retirement be any different? I mean, they go back to college. learn new instruments, start skateboarding.
Whoa!
Okay, maybe that one's not for everybody, but saving for retirement is. With aceyourretirement.org, you can get on track with your retirement savings no matter your age. Just have a 3-minute chat with Avo, the friendly digital retirement coach from AARP. You'll get personalized recommendations based on your input that are easy to understand and work with your lifestyle. It's quick, easy, and free. Plus, it's sponsored by AARP, so you know they got your back.
Gnarly move, Dad.
Thanks, sweetie.
So wherever you are in your retirement savings journey, head to aceyourretirement.org and start chatting with Avo today. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Neil Armstrong waited 6 hours and 39 minutes to step onto the surface of the moon. Jackie Robinson waited 20 months to play his first game with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And even DiCaprio had to wait 22 years to win an Oscar. You can wait until your destination. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Briznet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Briznet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 219 and XM 201, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net.
This is Jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love the Horse Racing Radio Network, the best show on the planet.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Yeah, we're big fans of Rajiv Maharaj, too. He was with me in the first hour of the program talking about his new endeavor called Road Jockey. Pretty cool stuff. You go back and listen to that on the podcast after we finish up at 11 a.m. Eastern. Tim Wilkin was with me in the first hour as well. He'll be with me again in the final hour of the program for I Ask, They Answer. He'll be joined by Dale Romans. Bob Ehalt was here at 9 o'clock Eastern. Great stuff from Bob, talking about the New York Islanders and the new arena and how this plays into NYRA and what their approach is going to be going forward. And then Ron Nicoletti walking through that Gulfstream Rainbow 6 sequence later today. That was in the previous segment. Poll question today: which morning line favorite is most likely to win in today's three greatest stakes races across the country? You have Obligatory in the Chalukie, Serve the King in the Red Smith, and Eight Rings in the Native Diver. And then the fourth choice is that all three will win. And right now it is Serve the King. HRN Nation saying 37% of you saying that Serve the King is the most likely of the morning line favorites to win in those three races today. Had a couple of people chime in and say that all three will get beat. And Kent weighs in and says he likes Midcourt to win today. So there you go. Keep those votes coming at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And if you don't do that, you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. Well, it's time now, as I do in this segment every single week, to take a look at some notable dates in racing history as they apply to this weekend, to this weekend. Yesterday, November 19th, 1956, was the anniversary for jockey Fernando Toro winning his first career race at the Hippodromo in Santiago, Chile. Fernando retired with 3,555 career wins, including a win aboard the filly Royal Heroine, who beat the boys in the 1984 Breeders' Cup Mile. So happy anniversary to Fernando Toro. November 19th, 1995, yesterday was the anniversary of jockey Russell Bays becoming the first rider to have won 400 races in a year for four consecutive years. That's after he rode Royal Boutique to victory at Golden Gate Fields. Russell Bays has always been content being the big fish in a small pond, never winning a Triple Crown or a Breeders' Cup race, but his 12,842 career wins are more than any jockey in history and over 3,300 more than the guy in second place. You may have heard of him, Lafitte Pinkeye Jr. Tomorrow, by the way, November 21st, is the anniversary, 1971, of Secretariat completing his preliminary training at Meadow Training Center. Yeah. If we only knew what was to come. I think some people did. November 22nd, 1990. The anniversary of jockey Pat Day marking his 5,000th career winner when he rode Screen Prospect to victory in the Fall City Handicap at Churchill Downs. Day was the 12th rider in history to hit the 5,000 win mark at that point. Patient Pat retired with 8,803 career wins, which places him fourth on the all-time list. And those are notable dates in racing history as they apply to this weekend and the couple of days surrounding this weekend. Busy third hour of the program. Begins with Sean Clancy and his In the Room segment. This week, Sean sits down with Charlestown's top trainer Jeff Runco to discuss making the transition from a rider to a successful training career. 10:25, Kurt Becker takes you on his weekly stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And at 10:30, I once again welcome trainer Dale Romans and turf rider Tim Wilkin for this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer. If your local station is leaving us at this time, continue listening on Sirius 219, XM 201, or horseracingradio.net. Hour 3 is next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Spring Quality on the outside. Here comes Call Provision. Spring Quality, Call Provision. Spring Quality, held on. Spring Quality and Edgar Prado. They take the Red Smith Stakes.
She's Pretty Lucky gives way. There's one furlong to go. My Lady Curlin comes away with the lead. Karen is right there. Sally's Curlin on the outside continues to close. Here comes Sally's Curlin coming after My Lady Curlin. My Lady Curlin, Sally's Curlin, Sally's Curlin, My Lady Curlin. Sally's Curlin got it.
This is the Equine Forum presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They come for home and Hayden's Havoc. Hayden's Havoc finding more on the lead. And it's Hayden's Havoc going to be a memorable win for trainer Peter Miller. Win number 1,000 for Peter Miller.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Busy edition of the Equine Forum rolling on this Saturday morning, the 20th day of November 2021. Happy to have you back with me this morning. If you miss any portion of the show, simply go back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure. Not just this show, but all of our shows posted for you as podcast at horseracingradio.net, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Looking forward to this third hour. It is loaded with top quality content, including this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy. As Sean sits down with now trainer Jeff Runco, the top trainer at Charlestown year in and year out, Jeff started his career, like so many other trainers have, as a jockey, and Sean sat down with him to talk about that approach, that philosophy, and how his career has developed from jockey to now successful trainer. It is this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with former jockey Jeff Runco and present trainer at Charlestown after a banner seven stakes win on the big card here at Charlestown. Take me back to your riding career. I remember you riding around Delaware Park in the mid-'80s, I guess, or early 80s?
Yeah, it was early 80s to mid-'80s. Started out in Louisiana with riding a few horses and then sent up, got an agent that wanted me to ride some horses for Bud Delp up in Maryland. So we went up there, and the first day we were in there, I actually had three winners on the card the first day I came into Bowie Racetrack. And we had a pretty good career as the Bug, riding in Maryland, Delaware, and so forth. I tried a few different tracks as far as that went. Got a little bit heavier as my career went on. Rode some horses here at Charlestown, and that's where I met my wife Susan, and you know, rode a few horses for a few more years until my weight got the best of me.
Yeah, take me through how did you get to the track? I mean, family into it, or how did you start at the track?
Actually, just because I was small. I was from Nebraska, and that's back when they had Exarban, and I had a friend of the family that had a farm of horses when I was going to, you know, in high school, and I learned to, you know, clean stalls and ride the pony and learn to gallop horses, and that's where I learned. I started out in the Midwest in Nebraska.
And so Zach Sarban in Nebraska, and then from there, where'd you go?
From there, I went to Louisiana, and that's I rode there for with the bug there for a while until I got hooked up. A friend of mine hooked me up with Bud Delp, and that's where I went to Maryland with him.
So when you win three races first day at Bowie, you think, wow, I've made it, I guess.
Yeah, it definitely helped things, you know, go off. I had a pretty good bug year. We had quite a few winners with the bug. Rode for the Delps and Ronnie Alfano and a lot of the big guys. And then they went to Delaware, and I rode quite a few there. And you know, after you lost a bug, things got a little bit tougher, and that's when things changed with that and my weight. You know, got a little bit heavy. So you know, I knew I wasn't going to be riding, but so long. But you know, that's kind of how it went.
And then that was retired in 84, I think, maybe. Would that be right?
Somewhere in that area. I can't remember exactly. It's been a while.
So when you retire, you rode your last race at Charlestown. Take me through that, the last ride. Was it a tough decision, or what was that like deciding on it?
Well, it was. That's where I met Susan, my wife. You know, she had a few horses, and I was riding a few for her. And, you know, I just after being, you know, fight my weights along, I just started, you know, working with her with the horses. And, you know, we developed, you know, a string of horses together and just, you know, got it to, you know, to grow into what it is today. It's, you know, between the two of us, we've, you know, work hard together, and she's a great asset to me as far as, you know, getting this business going. And, you know, it slowly developed over the years.
So it's a pretty natural process going from a jockey to a trainer.
You know, I guess it was pretty natural. I mean, I liked it. I mean, it just, you know, we started with, you know, 7, and then it went to, you know, 9, and then it went to 11, and then 15 over the years. Then next thing it was 18, and, you know, as the stable grew and I was around horses more, and my wife, you know, was doing a lot of it before I was. She taught me a lot and showed me a lot, and you know, I paid attention. I galloped horses, and we were getting on our own horses, and you know, you just learn as you go. So at that point, you know, I'd been around horses for, you know, quite some time, and I was around some good trainers when I had the bug, because you know, back then when you had the bug, you rode for trainers and you worked. It's not like it is today. You worked for an outfit. You had a lot of horses. You probably cleaned stalls before we galloped, and then you know, you learned about doing up horses and legs and everything. So you know, I had a good, you know, start to as far as learning about horses before I ever, you know, got to the crib. But it was still a lot of learning. There's always a lot of learning in this business.
Yeah, no doubt, we're learning every day. And your mentor would have been like a guy like Buddy Delp, or who'd you learn the most from?
You know, it's hard to say. I learned a lot. Probably a guy named Dale Burns, who's an older Midwest trainer who kept me under his wing for quite a few years. Him and my wife, definitely my wife. But he was the guy that brought me along. And I'll tell you, we used to, you know, we would go do the Nebraska circuit there. And before that, you know, we would winter down in Oklahoma with, you know, 35 horses. And, you know, me and a few Mexicans, and we would clean all the stalls, and we'd gallop all afternoon. We'd start at 5 in the morning. We'd finish at 5 in the evening. And you learn a lot about horses doing it that way.
Yeah, that's the way to learn, right? Hands-on, work all day, don't have anywhere else to go, I guess.
Yeah, you know, but I was young. I didn't care. It was fun. So, you know, we did it. And then, you know, then after I started with Susan, that's when, you know, you learn more of the real, you know, defining things about, you know, training horses, you know, and you learn more, you know, as you see things, you know, so that's, and you learn how, you know, just, you know, when I ride the pony up and back every day with my sets, and I watch them go, and at this point in my career, I'm pretty good at being able to see how these horses are going, and I look at all of them going up and all of them coming back. You know, I've got a radio on. I've talked to my assistants and say, hey, we need to put this one to the side. We need to look at something, or something needs to be looked at when we get back. So, you know, just as you learn to train horses and you learn how to be observant of all the things, you try to catch as much as, you know, as you can to, you know, do the right thing for the horses. So
yeah, and that experience as a jockey has to pay off as you train horses, right? The being able to get on horses and feeling what they're like and what they can deal with, what they can't deal with, what they're dealing with, I guess.
Yeah, that and after watching them go, I've learned to really see how horses move, and when you see how horses move, and you can tell a whole lot by, you know, how they're doing and how they breeze, and you know, it's just it just takes time. You know, you have to do it for a while. I mean, you just got to do it for a while and watch the horses go and you know, learn how the horses are, you know, while they're training.
And as a former jockey, are you, does that make you more critical or less critical of jockeys riding your horses or and any horses?
I don't think it makes me more critical, but it makes it, it helps me help them. Because I go to the gate with them, and I can sit there, and I'm going to say, and they're in the gate with the horse, and I'll say, listen, or I'll see something that the jockey or rider will do at night, and I'll say, you know, you don't need the assistant starter to turn his head for you. Use your rein and keep one hand on the mane and turn your head himself. You help the horse. You can help the horse better than the assistant starter can help the horse. Get his hind end against the back doors so when they kick it, he doesn't have to back up. He's already against the back doors. Things like that, that part has definitely helped me a lot as far as being able to we've brought a lot of bug boys along over the years. We had Jose Montano, who was an Eclipse Award winning bug boy from here. And I think I taught him a lot, and I tried to teach him a lot. And I watch races, and I can see a lot of times I'll see before they even open the gates, this horse is not going to get off good because of the way he's standing. And I'll talk to the rider after I say, you know, if you'd have done this or done that, I think it would have helped you a lot. And, you know, when we're in, with the young horses at the gate in the morning, we'll, you know, I'll sometimes get a lot of, not a lot, but sometimes I'll get off the pony and I'll get up in the gate and I'll say, this is what you need to do. This is how it's going to make you benefit the horse and get the horse out of the gate better. And, you know, so being a rider definitely helped me on that aspect because some of these young guys just haven't learned. They haven't had enough experience to do that. And if you can help them on those type of things, it's great. And it'll help you tenfold as far as when it comes to race at night.
And you have a great relationship now with Arnaldo Bocachica, who won all seven stakes the other night. What's that? How important is that to have a relationship with a kid first? You know, he gets first call rider, and I'm sure he comes in every morning or you know when you need him to breeze horses. How important is that?
It's tremendous. He deserves everything he gets. He's the hardest working leading rider probably in the country. You know, he works every day except maybe Thursday. And, you know, if he needs a day off, he gets it. But, you know, he doesn't mind coming in. And if I'm away, if I'm at the sales or something, I'll say, hey, I'm going to be at the sales. He says, don't worry. I'll make sure everything goes smooth. Because, you know, this is his barn, you know, and he wants to make sure it goes right, too. So he's a hardworking guy. We have a great relationship. He can take constructive criticism if something goes wrong. You know, and he's a very good rider. And there's still things that, you know, I can point out to him, and he can handle it and does, you know, what he has to do as far as, you know, what we talk about. Because we talk about races, you know, well ahead of time, especially on breeders' nights and the big nights. You know, we talk about what's going on. And then we'll, you know, if we had a big night of racing, you know, we'll sit down in the morning and say, hey, you know, what happened or what we could have done or what we did right or whatever. So it's a great relationship. That's why, you know, we've had pretty good success there because we do it. We mesh very well together.
Yeah, and he must respect you for the experience you've had as a jockey, I guess, too. That helps.
I think so. Yeah, he knows I know what I'm talking about when it comes to a lot of these things. So, you know, when I tell him something, he takes it to heart, and he's very attentive, you know, as far as paying attention to what we talk about. You know, and there's things that happen that, you know, I'll come back to race and say, okay, you know, if you'd have done this or, you know, I think, you know, you especially the gate thing is one thing that is important here. So if you get your horse standing correctly and get them where they need to be, that's really important here. And he knows I stress that. I stress it with all the riders that the importance of having a horse prepared, you know, in the gate. So that's one thing we talk about some. But Bocas rode enough horse. He knows what he's doing. I don't have to tell him too much. But you know, periodically we talk about stuff. And we always, when we're in the paddock, one thing about Arnaldo, he's already looked at the race. You know, he knows where the speed is. He knows how the race is going to set up. He does his homework, you know, and, you know, because I ask him, I say, who's the speed in here? And he knows. I've just checked to see if he's looked at the race, and he's already looked at it. So he does a good job.
And from a former jockey standpoint, when you look at a kid like that's won 2,000 races and leading rider, is it, he must be pride. I mean, not envious, I guess, that maybe you didn't have that kind of career, but more proud of a kid that you could help and work with? Or what's that like as a mentor kind of looking from the, you know, from an older perspective, I guess?
Well, I'm definitely proud of the guy. I mean, I'm not envious at all because I tell you what, you couldn't get me to ride. I mean, that's a tough game. You know, I liked riding. I did it. I mean, I was young then, and it was okay. But I definitely liked training much better than being a rider. You couldn't make me ride horses again. That's a tough game. Those guys you know, work hard, and it's difficult, and it, you know, it's just, you know, somewhat dangerous too. So, you know, those guys, you know, those guys are tough. I give them all credit. All these jockeys that do it, I give them credit. But I respect his, what he's done. He works hard, like I said, deserves everything he gets. And you know, I can't say enough about him. I'm really proud of the kid and his wife. They're great people, and you know, I can't say enough about him.
Yeah, I always say, people ask me how, if I miss riding races, I go, well, I miss it like a time of my life. I miss it like college. Like, it was a time of my life that is long gone, right? And you look back on it and think with fond memories, but you don't miss it like you want to go do it again.
No. I liked it okay then, but I mean, it's still, I just liked the training so much better because it's not as far as the danger or anything like that. It's just, I enjoy watching and developing young horses. I mean, that's my thing. That's our thing. We've got years and years ago, I decided, you know, claiming and that kind of stuff when we first started getting horses from people and stuff, which we do get some. But our thing is buying young horses and developing young horses. That's what we want to do because it's so rewarding to buy a yearling or breed horses. My wife bred, you know, a tremendous amount of young horses are just, you know, phenomenal. You know, North Atlantic, Slip the Cable, Sea Rescue. I go on and on about some, you know, these all horses were, you know, very, very good horses over in their career. A new 2-year-old we got this year, Coastal Mission. So to bring these horses, especially even from birth or even from the sales to their racing career, is just rewarding. It's a lot of work. I will not kid you. It's a lot of work, but it's tremendously rewarding to see these horses develop into really good horses. So I love it. I really do.
Yeah, your 7 winners. We walked up and down your shed road. Those horses were young horses you bought as yearlings, foals, and developed them to have a night like that.
Yep. So you know we tried to find them and hopefully we try to pick out the right ones and we've done okay doing that over the years. So we're just going to continue to try to continue developing these young horses.
And what's the key to your success? I mean, you've built an empire here at Charlestown. I'm not sure anybody's done it to this level, for at least for a long time. What's the key to that?
You know, it's just started slowly, and we've just, you know, developed it over the years. And now that we have kind of made our mark as doing well as the young horses, it's just how it's kind of gone. You know, my wife's had a big part of it, no doubt about it. She continues to help, you know, with a lot of the stuff that I do with this outfit, and as far as the running the farm and breeding the horses and mating the horses, and you know, giving me some firepower now and then, you know, when we get the young horses that we breed, and it's just you know, keeping at it, working hard, and you know, keeping at it. That's what it takes.
And when you win 7 races on a card like that, do you take a moment and think, "Wow, I never thought it would get to this level"? Or what's that like?
It's like, wow, did that just happen? You know, because, you know, obviously those things aren't supposed to happen like that. You know, when you have a 7-night stake win, it's just, you know, even that night, like I said, it took a while to sink in. You know, you don't think that everything's going to go right like that on a night like that. You think, something usually happens, you know, either a bad trip or a stumble out of the gate or anything can happen. But to have it all go right, everything go smooth, everything mesh right, you know, it doesn't really happen that often. So we took it we took it all in, and, you know, at the end of the night, it was so busy, we didn't really even sit down and think about it that night. But the next day, we kind of just looked, me and my wife just kind of looked and said, "Do you believe that just happened?" You know, it was pretty wild. It was very exciting. You know, very happy for the owners who buy these young horses, and you know, and David Rame, Dan Ryan, Huntertown Farm, you know, provide us with really nice young horses to train every year. So it was just a great night.
And for the Fanticipate question of the day, who is your biggest fan, as a jockey or as a trainer? Who is your biggest fan?
Well, my wife for sure. But, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, I don't know really who my biggest fan is. I mean, after the races, you know, we got a lot of text message, a lot of emails, a lot of phone calls from people all over the country, you know, because a lot of people saw it and they thought it was a pretty neat thing to see, you know, owners, ex-owners, you know, trainers from all over the country. You know, it was, and I'm not sure, but it was just one of those nights. It was just, one of those magical nights. It all worked out.
That's Jeff Runco, journeyman jockey to a Charlestown legend.
Yeah, Jeff Runco, what interesting take on that segment this week. Somebody who is not a jockey currently, but certainly was, and now segues into this successful trainer role, and it has been quite a ride for him. He has saddled, as of today, 4,518 career winners. And that comes on the heels of that riding career, which wasn't nearly as successful as what he's experiencing here on the trainer side. And my thanks to Jeff for taking time to sit down with Sean and to Sean Clancy for putting that together. If you missed any of that interview or any of Sean's In the Room segments, there have been some unbelievable and emotional conversations. Head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast of all of his In the Rooms on our website at horseracingradio.net. When I come back, it is time to join Kurt Becker as he takes you on a stroll through racing history. Then I will get you ready for the final segment of the show. I Ask, They Answer with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. That's all ahead on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Riptide Rock flying down the outside. I think safe conduct narrowly from Riptide Rock and a photo in the Queen's Plate. And Raging Bull, but Daisuke Fukumoto stole this year's Rico Woodbine Mile with Town Cruise. Walton Street demolishes them, a big winner of the Patterson Canadian International.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 12:55 Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:45 Eastern. With racing now through December 4th and plenty of weekend stakes, you are not going to want to miss out on the action at Woodbine. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com.
The Adina Springs Stallion roster is loaded with classic bloodlines and classic performance.
Oh, the classy point of entry would not be denied.
Dynaformer Zaire, point of entry, a global sire with black type horses in five countries, and the number one sire of grade one performers in his crop. Multiple grade one winner Shaman Ghost, the best son of Ghost Zapper, whose two-year-olds race this year.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost. He has won the Woodward.
Silent Name, the only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America, and Canada's champion sire 3 years in a row.
Silent Poet in front of the Neotic, and this one's for you, Martha. Silent Poet's won it.
And the newest addition to the Adina Springs roster, American Guru, from a proven winning family, steeped in tradition, with a strong Mr. Prospector influence on both sides.
But American Guru continues to keep on giving. And American Guru has dominated.
Classic bloodlines, classic performance. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
Hey, it's Corey Lannery. You listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. He was the quintessential California horse, a true Calbred who never raced outside the Golden State, but set a record by winning 34 stakes races at California tracks. His name was Native Diver. Bred and owned by Mr. and Mrs. L.K. Shapiro, Native Diver was foaled at their Mardor Farm in Canoga Park, California, near Los Angeles on April 16, 1959. The 20-acre farm was populated with dairy cows, beef cattle, turkeys, and chickens, as well as tomato plants, artichoke plants, and orange, persimmon, plum, peach, nectarine, and nut trees. Native Diver was born into this environment, a son of the California-based stallion Imbros, former world record holder at a mile and a 16th. His mother was Fleet Diver, a mare whom the Shapiros had claimed for $3,500. The colt was dark bay or brown, almost black, and he was described as handsome in appearance, but nervous and high-strung in demeanor. The colt also had an unfortunate habit of falling when he left his stall for training. His handlers determined that his hind feet were striking his front legs behind the knee, and he was intentionally falling to the ground to get his front legs out of the way before his hind legs came forward. Trainer Buster Millerick suggested that gelding the colt might help his disposition, and it was hoped that the routine surgery would also be a step toward improving his stride. And the strategy worked. Native Diver, just a two-year-old at the time, returned to training in the summer of 1961 and began pointing for his debut. Observers noted that he was tall and ran with his head held high in the air. Making his career debut at Bay Meadows in the San Francisco Bay Area on September 27, 1961, Native Diver came home a winner by 7.5 lengths. On November 7th, he went to Tanforan Racetrack on the San Francisco Peninsula and romped by 10 lengths. And on November 25th, he won the El Camino handicap by 6 lengths on a rain-soaked track as the odds-on favorite. At the end of the year, Native Diver developed a cough and began losing weight. Human beings seemed to make him nervous. It was said that he fretted and worried and was difficult to manage. He had talent, as evidenced by his victories, but he was still a high-strung horse who would not tolerate any effort by a jockey to rate his speed. He had won all three of his sprint races, but had been defeated in his only two attempts to stretch to a mile and a 16th. As a three-year-old, Native Diver ran primarily in sprint races, winning on 5 occasions and setting a track record late in the year at Bay Meadows, covering 6 furlongs in 1:08 2/5 seconds. But in his second-to-last start of the year, he showed another dimension to his ability when he won the San Jose handicap, again at Bay Meadows, at a mile and a 16th. More milestones would come as a four-year-old in 1963. On August 3rd, Native Diver would win the San Diego handicap at Del Mar, giving him a win at every major track in California. And 4 months later, a win in the San Francisco Mile at Golden Gate would make him only the second horse in history with a stakes win at all 6 California tracks. And still, he wasn't finished. In 1964, he recorded an unprecedented 16th career stakes win in California. In May of 1965 at Hollywood Park, he tied the world record at 7 furlongs by winning the Los Angeles handicap in a time of 1:20 before a crowd of 55,000. In July of 1967, Native Diver won the Hollywood Gold Cup at 1.25 miles for the 3rd consecutive year, becoming the first California bred to reach $1 million in career earnings. And on Labor Day 1967, he won the Del Mar handicap, equaling the track record at 1.08 miles in 1:46 3/5 seconds. He carried 130 pounds that day, while the runner-up carried 109. But that was where the story would end. Regrettably, Native Diver developed an intestinal disorder and died just 8 days after his win in the Del Mar handicap. The 8-year-old gelding was buried near the grandstand at Hollywood Park. His final record counted 37 wins in 81 career starts, including 34 California stakes wins. Racing historian Ed Bowen wrote, quote, "Native Diver had speed, valor, and perseverance. He had class. He was never voted a champion and won less than half his races, but his magic did not need invincibility. And he was owned by the largest syndicate ever formed. He belonged first to the California racing public and later to all of American racing," end quote. Later today, Del Mar will host the Native Diver Stakes, a grade 3 event for 3-year-olds and up at 1.08 miles. And we remember Native Diver too, a California bred who helped raise the profile of West Coast racing over 50 years ago. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Now, much like those in the room segments with Sean Clancy, you can listen to every Stroll Through Racing History segment with Kurt Becker on our website, horseracingradio.net. We have a page for each of those segments, so go back and enjoy them and binge listen one day, and I think you'll enjoy so many of those segments that have been produced over the course of this past year. Some news out of Lane's End, by the way. That segment presented by Lane's End and Keeneland, and my thanks to them for their sponsorship of those Stroll Through Racing History stories. Lane's End announcing that Lexingtonian will be standing at Lane's End for this upcoming breeding season, and that promises to be a good one. New for 2022, the Grade 1 winner and multiple graded stakes played, I can say this, multiple graded stakes placed runner, Lexingtonian, should be a great addition to that stallion roster. He has been fantastic through his racing career, and looking forward to seeing his next career at stud. Speaking of the Native Diver Stakes today, I told you that is a wide open race and a bit of a head scratcher for me anyways, from a handicapping perspective. You know, Midcourt is a horse that is classy and has raced against top competition. His last race, when he was eased and walked off in the Awesome Again, when he finished behind Medina Spirit and Stiletto Boy and Express Train, something was up. And if you can look past that and say, okay, his past couple of workouts since then have been pretty solid. If you can get past that and say he can be back on top of his game, he could be the horse to beat at odds of 4-1. I don't know if I'm willing to do that. The favorite, the morning line favorite, is Eight Rings from Bob Baffert. I think he has three horses entered in that race. Eight Rings comes out of the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, where he finished fourth behind that brilliant performance by Life is Good, a horse that is only one for five at Del Mar. He has never raced at this distance. I think he's a vulnerable favorite, but trying to find a horse to beat him is not going to be easy. Kiss Today Goodbye is 5-1 on the morning line for Eric Kruljack, but another horse that, you know, on his day, he can finish. He'll come from far back. He's a closer. On his day, he could be very tough, but he's too inconsistent to really take a stab. Now, he does add blinkers today. Maybe that's another horse to take a look at. It's a wide-open renewal of the Native Diver. And if you're wondering about some of the historical trends as they pertain to that race, Chris McCarron is the jockey who has won more renewals of the race. Obviously, he won't be winning today because he is now retired. Richard Mandela is the Hall of Fame trainer who has saddled more winners than any other trainer in the Native Diver, but Richard does not have a horse entered today. But just for your knowledge, that's the way it stands historically in that particular race. And a great, great look back on his career from Kurt Becker in that previous segment. All right, when I come back, it is time for one of the segments of the show that is becoming quickly one of the more popular segments we have each and every week. I ask, they answer, with Dale Roman's Tim Wilkin. They're with me next. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
A five-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrogate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Champions are returning to Gulfstream for the championship meet starting December 3rd until April 3rd. Witness the best thoroughbred racing Wednesday through Sunday with weekly stakes races. Returning for its sixth year this January is the 2022 Pegasus World Cup with world-class racing, delectable cuisine, stunning celebrities, and iconic fashion. New for 2022 is the third graded stakes race, the Pegasus Turf for fillies and mares with a $500,000 purse. Tickets go on sale November 8th. Visit PegasusWorldCup.com to learn more and get tickets.
This son of Danzig ranks among the world's elite sires, with Grade 1 winners on dirt and turf and star performers both at home and abroad. Warfront's success as an international super sire is unmatched. Recent stars include War of Will, a classic winner on dirt and a Grade 1 winner on turf, Halliday, and Civil Union. In the auction ring, his progeny continue to command top dollar. Warfront, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Weanling shopping? Buy Maryland breds and take advantage of one of the most innovative programs in the country. Breeders earn a 30% share of purses on all overnight races for Maryland bred horses finishing in the top three, and 15% in all stakes when your Maryland bred finishes in the top three, capped at $100,000. Owners earn a 15% share on all overnight races for Maryland bred horses finishing first, second, or third, and developers get a 15% share on all overnight races for Maryland breds in the top three spots. Visit MarylandThoroughbred.com for details.
Okay, this is Carl Nasker, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They round the far turn in the classic with Muad'Dib in front. Hero's Man hugs the rail and tries to battle on. North Atlantic plugging away in third, but Muad'Dib takes over. Inside the final furlong, opens up on a two-length lead from Hero's Man. And then North Atlantic, what a night for Boca Chica and Runko and Muad'Dib. He's a perfect 8-for-8 and the Breeders' Classic champion. Muad'Dib dominates in the classic from Hero's Man, then North Atlantic in third.
And with that call of the West Virginia Breeders' Classic, I say welcome to this week's edition of I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin. Muad'Dib, say that one five times fast. He etched his name in the record books with that win in the West Virginia Breeders' Classic back in October. That was Paul Espinoza who had the call that you just heard. The man who co-founded the West Virginia Breeders' Classic, Sam Huff, passed away this week at the age of 87. Of course, in addition to his contributions to racing, Huff was best known as a Hall of Fame football player for the New York Giants and for the Washington Redskins. We'll spend plenty of time talking about that topic later in the show, but we begin with a question that was submitted by a listener this past week, which, by the way, if you have a topic or a question for Dale and Tim and you want to hear them debate or you want to hear their opinion on something, simply email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net, or hit us up on Twitter or Facebook, and we'll try to make sure we work those into the show each and every week for you. Well, Eric in New Jersey, guys, he asks, well, is it time to change two of racing's oldest and, in his opinion, useless rules, those being coupled entries and handicap grade one races that we see occasionally? Who wants it first? Dale?
Yeah, what was the first one?
Coupled entries.
Yeah, they need to go away, and they have in most states. And I've said this before, like New York was one of the last states to keep them coupled, and it's a New York state rule. But the New York people could bet on uncoupled horses in other states through simulcasting. We should be on all on the same page everywhere with the gambling rules for sure. And uncoupling entries, it just makes for better racing. In today's world where so few people on so many horses, you need to uncouple them so you have bigger fields and when they run against one another. And tell me the second question to go.
Handicap
races.
Yeah, grade one races that are handicaps.
Yeah, but that's an interesting look at things. You don't see many of them anymore. I think it's just laziness on handicappers' part, the secretaries. But there's pros and cons to those. We talk about the weight that some of these great horses of Fargo and Kelso, Dr. Fager, carried to beat horses. And back then, that's what made them so much better than everybody else and made them so great. And another problem with not handicapping races is when there's one superior horse like one of those three, who's going to run against them? And a lot of times they weren't getting enough horses, so you try to weight them enough to where that they – other horses can compete with them. But I never really thought about the aspect of being able to pick up a grade one win just because you were in a whole lot lighter. I've always thought about the other way, how great the great horses were to win with the heavyweights on them.
Yeah, it's interesting. And that was the other follow-up question that the listener had. He said, is it time to race on a level playing field and just see who's the best at equal weights?
Well, we do that in all the classics, that's for sure. Now, you know, whether we should do it in every race, I don't know. I don't know. I think there's pros and cons to it both ways here. I know if you had Cigar running against equal-weighted horses every time, I mean, how many times would people show up and try to take him on?
Yeah, yeah. Timmy, what say you?
Well, obviously, we don't have any Dr. Faggers or Kelsos around. I mean, Dr. Fager carried 134 pounds. I mean, and I think if my research is right, Kelso carried 130 24 times in his career and won 13 times. I mean, we don't have horses like that anymore. I don't know if they're just not iron horses like they used to be. But if you start making all equal weights for all these horses, like Dale said, who's going to run against the big horses, even though we don't have the superstar big horse in the last couple of years, like we had, when you go back to horses like Curlin and even Zenyatta, I think that you have to make it an even playing field, but, you know, you also have to protect the better with, you're not going to put the best horse, and you got to give him some kind of
an incentive to run.
And I'll ask you this, Dale. I mean, if a horse is carrying 126, is that much different than carrying 122?
Yeah, it matters. I think it does, especially going longer. I really do believe weight does make a difference. You hardly ever see a horse throw the rider off at the gate and not win the race.
Yeah. I agree with that, but I think you have to have some weight on these horses.
Let me ask you this question, guys.
I don't think there's a wrong answer. I don't think there's a wrong answer. There's an argument for both sides.
Yeah, and this is a little bit of a spin-off of this same topic. Timmy, you just mentioned the fact that maybe we don't have iron horses like a Kelso or a Forgo or those horses that carried so much weight. do we not have those horses in the game today because we don't put weight on horses so they don't have an opportunity to prove that they can do it? Or have we seen a weakening in the breed where you don't think they could carry that kind of weight?
Well, aren't they breeding more towards speed now? It doesn't seem like they're looking for the durability of the horses that stick around for a long time. You just don't see it that much anymore because of the breeding. So, yeah, I think I think the breeding is different.
I don't know. I think it's just secular. I think great horses come around every few generations. I mean, we could say that about the Zenyatta was a great one. Cigar was a great one. And maybe we haven't seen one in the last few years, but we will. And the one thing about Kelso and Forgo, I mean, you got to remember, they were both geldings.
Yeah.
And, yeah, John Henry's probably the last top gelding we've had. And it's hard to get anybody to cut a horse anymore. They don't do it quite as often as they used to because all the value is in being a stallion. But there'll be others come along.
Maybe out of your barn.
I would love to have one superstar. I've had a couple in my life. I think Kitten's Joy was the closest thing I had to really having the true superstar. When you let them over, they were going to win.
Would you have wanted Kitten's Joy? Could Kitten's Joy have handled carrying 134, 135 pounds?
I could have ridden him in a lot of those races. And that's 360 pounds. So, yeah, nothing mattered with him. He was just that superior over that three-year-old crop that year.
All right. Timmy, how about coupled entries? You agree with Dale that those just need to go away?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's I don't know what it does for the better. You bet one horse that, I mean, one of the horses in there might be in there to be a rabbit for the other one. And, you know, when you're betting these horses, I just think it takes a lot out of the handicapping angle when you're getting two, sometimes three for the price of one. And like Dale said, the field size, it makes the field smaller. So, yeah, I think we get rid of them.
All right. Well, our thanks to Eric in New Jersey for that question. Again,
those are good questions, Eric.
Yeah, if you have a question or a topic you want to hear Dale and Timmy debate each week, just simply email the show or hit us up on social media. All right, topic number two, and I have to tell you guys, when I was putting this together, I thought the big news of the week in the trainer ranks was going to be Dale going for a record-setting fourth win in the Grade 3 Chalukya at Churchill later today. But that is not the case because California-based Pete Miller made some big news of his own. He announced that he would be stepping away from the game, saying in a statement that the effort to compete at the highest level of my profession has taken its toll on my family and my health, and I believe this decision is best for me, my family, and our future. Now, let me point out that it is no secret that Miller has come under additional scrutiny lately after five horses from his stable died this year alone. He's also been sanctioned three times in 2021 for Class 4 medication violations. He stated that those incidences are not the reason for this temporary hiatus. So, Dale, I'm going to start with you here because you obviously understand the demands of the training profession. What do we make of this announcement by Pete Miller? And are we buying the fact when he says that these things that happened recently with his horses had nothing to do with him and with this decision?
Well, first of all, Pete's a friend of mine. I tried to call him last night when I first heard the news, and he obviously had his phone off. I'm going to take him for what he says, but I think it's a different way to look at it. I think that kind of thing of losing five horses, and it's not only the scrutiny from the outside, it's the scrutiny from within. We love these horses, and that puts extra stress on you. And it is tough. Every day you get up, you don't have a season. You can't win a Super Bowl and then rest for 4 months. You are there every single day. You're judged every day by everybody in the horse industry. As Steve Asmussen told me best one time, we were leaving Churchill Downs, and he said he had run 10 horses, won 3 races, and 7 people were mad at him. And you just think about that, how you live under the gun 24/7, 365 days a year. Pete and I are the same age. For 35 years, it wears on you. And then you have horses, you have problems like the horses that died this year on him, and you do get scrutinized, and social media is so hard on everybody. I understand. I'm taking him for his word, and I understand completely that he needs a break.
Timmy?
You know, I don't know Pete at all, being out in the West. He's a West Coast guy. I mean, but when you just read the stuff, I mean, when he said that, talked about the speculation related to this, wanted to make it clear that it's not a result of any regulatory action, secret agreement, hidden agenda. I mean, that puts up a red flag to me. Why would he say that? I know so many trainers, and I hope, and I think most of them, if not 95% of them, are all on the up and up. I think they really do love these animals, and it would just be unbelievable to me and hard for me to believe that anybody would try to put something in one of these animals to better themselves, because they do love these animals. And I just have a hard time accepting that somebody would do that. And if somebody would do it, they should kick them out of the game forever. And then, you know, like Dale said, you take it for what it's worth. It maybe he is struggling. Maybe he does have some problems and he has to sort out and, you know, but the fact that he's under so much scrutiny, and again, you go back to the social media has turned into the judge and jury in their own pathetic little minds sometimes. And, you know, that's not fair to him. So, you know, I hope he gets done what he has to have done, and, you know, then he comes back and is able to do something, because you're not in this game that as long as he's been and not have an affinity for these horses. That's what I think.
Yeah, and let's face it, we see this in other sports too. Mental health issues are real, and it's a problem that many people in other industries and other sports are dealing with, so this very well could be the case. Dale, I want to ask you a follow-up question here. Three Class 4 medication violations in 2021. Explain that to people. What is a Class 4 medication violation? And is three, it sounds like a big number to me.
Not that big a deal. It's what those are, Class 4s are all very mild legal medications that you can use and are just over just on too much. I mean, 4 is a little bit sloppy. You're trying to push the envelope probably, but nothing that's a major. You know, the Class A's or Class 1s or whatever they call them are the ones that have no therapeutic effect on horses and no reason to be in their system other than be trying to cheat and make them fetch, which be bronchodilators and blood doping issues and things like that. What we're talking about is probably just bute overages.
Yep.
You know, things like that. There do have reasons for us to use, and we all use on a regular basis that just probably weren't withdrawn. And I would bet all 4 of them were under the level that made any difference in the outcome of the race.
All right, well, there you go. Okay, so there's the Pete Miller topic. Let's move on to the next one, because I want to make sure we talk about this next topic, too. NFL Hall of Famer Sam Huff. I mentioned this earlier. He passed away this week at the age of 87. Now, in addition to being one heck of a football player, Huff was also a tremendous racing advocate. He began breeding horses after he retired from the NFL, and he co-founded the West Virginia Breeders Classic. And this got me thinking, guys. Who do you consider to be some of the most influential people in racing that made a name for themselves in other sports or other industries? There have been plenty. Timmy, you want it first?
Yeah, there have been plenty. I mean, I remember sitting in a box at Saratoga with George Steinbrenner when he was the owner of the New York Yankees, and he had Kinsman Stable. And I actually got to have a kind of a relationship with George. I was invited down to the stadium to watch a game with him in his box, which my dumb ass said, no, I don't think I want to do that. And I never went because I was an Orioles fan. I wish I would have done that, but that's here or there. But, I mean, he had Bellamy Road. I mean, 2005, second in the Travers. I mean, he won the Wood. He was seventh in the Derby for Nick Zito. Wonderful horse. And Steinbrenner was such a friend to racing. I mean, I remember when Real Quiet was going for the Triple Crown. He played the Belmont Stakes at Yankee Stadium before the Yankee game that night. I mean, he's just one. I mean, Bill Parcells, the former New York Giants coach, is still involved with racing. Eric Johnson, the hockey player, he's got horses. He had a horse just ran in the Breeders' Cup, a horse named McKinnon that was named for one of his teammates and was third in the Breeders' the Juvenile Turf, I believe.
Yep.
And you know, there's a whole bunch of them, and it just doesn't go with sports. I mean, remember MC Hammer with he had the Philly light back in the 90s. I remember him at Belmont Park with his suit jacket on with no shirt running around hammer timing. And it was they're fun things that when these people from other sports get involved, it's just so much fun for the game. And I think it brings more people's interest into the game when you have some of these high profile people from other sports.
Yeah, there's too many to mention. You could go through almost any influential owner in the game, and they've made themselves they're a titan of some type of industry, whether it be go back to the Phippses with Bessemer Trust, or even like the Carnegies and people like that. But and what about Bing Crosby? I mean, being a founding member of Del Mar, and Jim McKay, which was founder of the Maryland Million, the great sports announcer. There's so many people that have been involved in other industries that love our sport, and it's a great thing. Like, it is good to have them come in. And you know, a lot of them have made a lot of money in industry, and they become celebrities in our sport. Alan Paulson, the founder of Gulfstream Aircrafts, made his money in Gulfstream building airplanes, but became a celebrity because of the horse racing that he had. So there's just too many to even talk about. But if I had to think, I'd think Crosby and McKay were very influential and have left a major footprint behind.
Yeah,
don't forget Joe Torre.
He was at the top of my list.
He's been involved with it too.
Yeah, Joe Torre, Bobby Flay, Toby Keith, Jake Delhomme, the quarterback, and Eddie Olczyk too, who we see all the time out there with
George
NBC.
Strait. I mean, I trained for George Strait. I've trained for Toby, and right now I've got two horses for Jay Gruden, ex head coach of the Redskins. Paul Gunter, defensive coordinator of the Vikings. We've got horses. They're both good friends. I've got horses with. You know, horse racing, I always say it's a great equalizer and brings people from all aspects of the world together. My brother went to India one time. He was telling me they went to a racetrack in India. He went over there for work, and he went in and watched, and he said he couldn't understand a word coming out of their mouths, but he knew every word they were saying. Everybody standing over a TV screen, snapping over their head and screaming. So it's a great equalizer worldwide.
Do you get free tickets to concerts?
Yeah, every once in a while.
Well, I hope they're good seats.
Oh, yeah, always.
Yeah, I've always wanted to meet George Strait. That was he's my favorite country music artist of all time, and I knew he was involved with racing. I said, I've got to find some way to get to George Strait. So maybe someday down the road we'll get a chance to do that. But there are so many people that have done great work in this sport that have made a name for themselves in other sports too, and there's a great crossover. All right, we're down to about a minute and a half here, guys, before we have to wrap it up. So we'll save a couple topics that I originally had planned for this week. We'll move them to next week, but how about this one? We have Thanksgiving coming up on Thursday. We won't get a chance to talk again until after that. For you guys, when you get your turkey, legs or breasts?
I'm dark meat always.
Timmy?
Breasts without question.
Well, yeah, here's something can't argue about. I like that juicy dark meat.
No, that stuff.
And I think I know a little more about eating than you do, Jimmy.
Well, you can have I'll send you my dark meat for my turkey.
Send it on. We're gonna have 25 people at the house, a lot of people in town, some people from the track in any place to go. We're gonna have a good big Thanksgiving. I love Thanksgiving. We always have a good time around my house.
What, how many pies are we gonna have, Dale?
How many what
pies?
That'll probably be 4 or 5, and it won't be enough. I'll bitch about I'm not bringing enough. I always say too much is better than not enough.
who does the cooking?
Well, here's a little trick to it. We order all sides from Ruth Chris, and Tammy takes care of the turkey.
What do you do?
So, eat.
Eat.
Right.
I figured that.
Yeah. It'll be a good time. I love Thanksgiving. We'll do a recap Saturday.
All right. Enjoy it, and we'll talk next week.
All right, fellas.
Sounds good.
All right, thanks, guys. Yep. There you go. Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin, happy Thanksgiving to them. Happy Thanksgiving to you as well. I'll get to another break. When I come back, I will wrap up the show and tell you what is ahead here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Thoroughbred Charities of America raises and distributes funding to approved nonprofits that help thoroughbreds and the people who care for them. TCA's annual grants support aftercare and incentive programs, health and human service initiatives for backstretch and farm workers, and equine-assisted therapy programs that utilize thoroughbreds. TCA is one, helping many. Please support TCA today at tca.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick and proud aunt. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing. But not every child gets to be carefree. One in six kids in the U.S. are hungry. One in six. That little girl sitting alone at the playground, she can't play like the other kids. She doesn't have the energy because she's hungry. School lunch will be her only meal today. It breaks my heart that this is the reality in our country, but it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste. This food is then provided to families and children in need. Being a kid should be about using your imagination, learning, and having fun. These children shouldn't have to miss out on simply being a kid because they're hungry. To find out how you can help end childhood hunger in your community, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
As the COVID-19 vaccines become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help me get back to doing the things I love, like meeting friends or traveling? And can I do it without putting my family at risk? You've got questions. That's normal. So visit getvaccineanswers.org for the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
This is Jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Oh, winding down a very busy show. Hope you enjoyed it. So much great content over the course of these past 3 hours. Courtesy of my special guest, Tim Wilkin, who kicked it off at 8:15 Eastern to look back on the legendary turf and sports writer, Red Smith. He also previewed today's race. Rajiv Miraj was with me talking about his new endeavor, road jockey, as he looks to benefit his native country of Jamaica with that food service delivery app. Bobby Holt was here. Got a chance to talk to him for a little bit. That was a lot of fun. He looked back on the, talked about the Islanders opening in their new arena adjacent to Belmont Park later tonight as they welcome the Calgary Flames. But he talked about what that will mean to Belmont Park, to the New York Racing Association, and how that relationship will come together. You'll make sure you go back and listen to that one if you missed it. Ron Nicoletti from Gulfstream was here to preview today's mandatory payout in the Rainbow Six. He walked through all six legs, gave you his selections, and if you're going to be betting that today, probably worth a listen on our podcast. In the room with Sean Clancy, he sat down with former jockey, now trainer, Jeff Runco. Kurt Becker strolled through racing history. My thanks to him and Dale Roman's Tim Wilkin just a short time ago. I ask, they answer, taking a look at so many of the hottest topics in the sport today. Again, if you missed any of those segments, if you missed any of the show, head back to our website and check out the podcast at your leisure. Also, too, by the way, check out the podcast of that Naira Betts Weekend Stakes preview to get ready to bet the races coming up later today. Only three greatest stakes races around the country on this Saturday afternoon. I asked you which morning line favorite in those three races is most likely to win today. Obligatory in the Chaluki, serve the King in the Red Smith, Eight Rings in the Native Diver. Or you could chime in and say all will win or none of them are going to win. 34% of you now a tied vote, saying serve the king in the red smith and eight rings in the native diver are the most likely morning line favorites to win. Not exactly overwhelming confidence in either one. Obligatory in the Chalukyi, the horse that most people feel is vulnerable today. Only 18% of you saying obligatory, the three-year-old tackling older horses for the very first time in that race, could be the one to win. That's very interesting. And I think I have to agree. I think I have to go with the fact that all three are likely to get beat today. None of them overwhelming favorites. Going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. Again, that Chalukyi coming up at Churchill Downs. You have the native diver out at Del Mar and then the Red Smith up at Aqueduct. We're back next week starting on Wednesday. Of course, it is Thanksgiving week. Again, a very happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners across HRN Nation. But we are back Wednesday with a special race day program presented by Twin Spires and then Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Thursday will be a day off for our team as we celebrate Thanksgiving. Then we come back Friday, race day presented by Twin Spires and the Naira Betts Weekend Stakes Preview to get you ready for a loaded weekend next Saturday, next Sunday in the sport of thoroughbred racing. I'll tell you all about that next week here on the Equine Forum. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio, to Chauncey for handling all of our social media as usual. Great job. And to all of you for being with me here this morning. We'll talk to you next time. Check out the podcast at horseracingradio.net. And as always, no more ties. Give me a break. Go Steelers.